Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Thank you. show number 1400 and something because I haven't had a chance to even look at this thing. But trust me, it's a lot of shows, and we hope that we'll be able to do a lot more. Welcome to the Stir Fry Hump Day Special. I'm your host, Michael O'Singer, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Radio on the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassin of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit. So who, what, when, where, why, and how. Right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, Hither and Yon, and of course the sisters as well. Special shout out to my girl Rhonda Harper. Sis, tan shit up in the motherland. We love you, darling. Please go safe. And of course, Sonic Cheryl, recovering from surgery. Sweetie, we are happy that you are feeling better. We love you. And of course, Radio Reggie down in Richmond, Virginia. Ricky Hampton Sr. in Detroit and Mike Roberson in Oakland, California. Thank you guys both for having me on last night. A fantastic show. Interviews were really awesome. Pat Freeman, the Mighty Obar, doing his bit for Western New York. Scattered about, but still kicking it with his great book, The Art of the Interview, Book One. You can find it on Amazon. Doing some really good shit out here. And, of course, the rest of the brothers, when they chime in, among them, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, G?
The NBA is telling me that they cannot find black head coaches.
Really?
Let me go through this with you real quick here.
Okay.
As of last night.
Yeah.
We've had a number of 7 coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Fired. 7.
Okay.
New Orleans. Dallas.
Yep.
You know all the names.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me you cannot find Michael, Patrick Ewing, Juwan Howard.
Yeah.
Penny Hardaway.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Stackhouse all have their coaches in college, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, let's go a little deeper here. Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
Bryce Unsell Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Chauncey Phillips.
Yeah.
Paul Mosley.
Yep.
Mark Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
David Fitzdale.
Yep.
Iman Udoka.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Cassells.
Mm-hmm.
Nate McMillan.
Yep.
To be fair, Nick McMillan's already got a job, so we got to.
Nick got a job.
Devon Ham.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Andy. Maurice Jesus by Brown. I just gave you 15 names.
Yep.
And the NBA got to be better than this.
Well, no, hold on, Gary. Let me play devil's advocate here because the NBA, Dr. Lapchick or whoever else as an advocate would say, we have a better hiring record than all the other major sports.
I'm sorry, but it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good enough.
Listen, I'm on your side. I appreciate what you're saying, G. But you know what they're going to tell you. They're going to say, okay, there were 25% job openings in the league, to your point. 7 of those spots got filled up, and not one was a brother or a sister. So they're going to tell you, get over it, we got this covered. Basketball's record is sterling on this because we have better higher records than all the other major sports. Tony,
well, I'm going to tell you guys we're going to have a net.
By the way, the other opening is in Portland.
Yes, and Dawn Staley is supposedly going to be
considered for the job. And see, that would be my next question. If Dawn Staley gets one of those jobs, would that would be huge.
That would.
I'm hoping that this isn't just, you know, them just, you know, sort of playing whatever, but I hear what you're saying, Gary, but you know what? To be completely honest, while there are some, put it this way, the Stan Van Gundy hire in New Orleans, we all, you know, laughed and chuckled.
Oh,
and to be honest with you, I'm surprised he lasts the full year, to be quite honest.
Exactly.
But I'm gonna do a Trading Places bet with you. I'm gonna put all my dollars on one. I'm gonna say that all those three openings that we mentioned, Portland, Dallas, New Orleans, all three will hire a black coach. That's
well,
my bet.
You have six openings.
I'm sorry?
You have six openings.
Who are the other two? Who are the other six?
Boston, Kelly.
Well,
Boston's not going to hire a black coach.
Well, we know Boston's not going to hire a black coach.
It's highly unlikely to hire a black coach.
Yeah, let's put it this way. I'm willing to bet of the six openings, five black coaches get hired.
All right.
I'll say five of the six will hire a black head coach.
Okay, Gary, put up your dollar. Is that a bet?
I hope you're right. I can guys down a dollar on that.
Yeah,
all right, but we gotta confirm it. Is that a bet?
What they're gonna do is this. We got two blacks, two women, and two white guys. It is going to happen.
We'll see.
Even if they hire just two, that still keeps their average higher than any other sport.
I have an argument.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is this. The NBA has the power to do this, and they will not do anything at all.
We know they won't do it. We know they won't do it. Come on now. I find it highly unreasonable. We got Radio Reggie in the mix as well. I don't think.
I'm sorry. Not that Reggie's on. I remember the other opening, Washington.
Yes.
And Brooks had the nerve to say that they was underpaying him. He was unhappy with the contract. Get out of here, coach.
Well, he won't have to be. He won't have to worry about being unhappy anymore.
For real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He got to get the hell up out of here.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. I see what your point is, Gary, but let's put it this way. This is not the NFL. This is not MLB. But look, they still have a small, very minuscule million-dollar boys network. See, Boston is a lost cause. Anything that comes out of those green and white assholes that live in town,
yeah.
I don't acknowledge anyway. Stevens should have been as far as I'm concerned, Stevens was fired because he, you know, they had that window to win, and in the NBA, you either put it this way, you get a 3 to 5 year window to win, you either become the Jazz or you become the old Clippers. And I think the scary part about Boston is that they may wind up being good enough just to get knocked out the first round.
There you go. But T, I got a question for you, T. The thing that pissed me off, I know we talked about last week, some people claim that some black folks are just in position to be figureheads, and I have to kind of disagree with that. In the sports arena, you catch holy hell just trying to make that climb and talking about figurehead and where the money is paid in those positions. I can't agree with that.
It depends. See, it depends on the sport. See, I don't think you get figureheads in the NBA. I look at here's the thing. I'm not even going to talk about Boston hiring Bill Russell. Boston ain't shit. I'm sorry. I'm never going to say nothing positive about Boston, and I freely admit that in court. You can put the holy Quran, the Torah, or whatever in front of me, and I'm still going to be like, Boston sucks. But think about guys like Wayne Emery, who was the first black GM with the Bucks for so long. 1975 finals, we had Casey Jones and Al Attles fighting for the championship.
They were
long before Al Attles, HBCU,
North Carolina Central.
Exactly. You know, but here's the thing. It depends on the teams, and it depends on the sport. I think it's safe to say that Ozzie Newsome wasn't a figurehead. I think it's safe to say that to a certain extent, when Doug had his job with DC, he wasn't a figurehead because he did go out and he did influence them to draft Hawkins, good, bad, or indifferent.
This is why I got about this. If you have a clown like Mark D'Antoni, he will get another job. I guarantee you get another job. No matter.
You know what?
You got to remember, that's Brooks.
You got to remember, Gary. Mark No D'Antoni is 70 years old now.
Yep.
And see, let's put it this way. He is with a team now that possibly could either get to a final or win a final. But what I'm saying is he going to be willing to leave what is a pretty cushy job at his age to be a head coach again? Because, see, it's the grind. The NBA it's a grind now. One of the reasons why I said the pressure on the Nets wasn't going to be on the big three, it was going to be on Nash. And so far, he hasn't been a factor. I mean, it helps to have KD have a godlike game. along the way.
But still,
I think now with Jackson, it's been a few years removed. Now I am not condoning what happened to him, but
Dad goes that man again.
I'm willing to bet you in his quiet moments, Mark Jackson is enjoying what he's doing. Because the whole deal of coaching, especially if with a long, long, long season the NBA is.
Did he say long?
Yeah. Now, see, now I'm with you. I would love to see Mark Jackson be a head coach again. But, see, a lot of this is also, does Mark want to be a head coach now? Because, again, Mark's
going to
be a
head coach now.
And you got a big time coach. You got my man that's with the New Jersey Nets. He's the Wizards, and got a ring from Florida State back in the day. And then you got my man that's on the bench with the Clippers. Big shot, Chauncey Bullock. I mean, come on, it's a whole lot of young guns coming up.
See, that's the thing. See, the next generation is already being put together. It's just a matter of will they be given the opportunity. Now, again, that Dawn Staley's name is coming up is a very good thing. But see, would she be? Because see, the thing is, she's in a. Let's be totally, totally honest here. She's in a better situation down there than she would be in Portland.
Don't forget the assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs, named Howard, that's been green for her.
She
might be the next
way.
Wizards coach.
And you know what? More power to her. Now, the one thing that she's going to have over Dawn is she's been in those NBA circles. See, as great a coach as Dawn is, there's going to be a transition. There's going to be a transition. Now,
who's the other coach used to be with LSU? They talking to her too, the Creole chick. What's her name?
Oh,
the coach.
I know you. I know you're talking about.
They interviewing her too.
I forgot her name. I can see her right now, but I can't think of her name. But see. Be whoever's going to be that first female coach, black or white, they're going to have to go through some mess. And the thing about it is, guys, it's not going to be that much from the players, I don't think. It's going to be the fans and these assholes. The first time she blows her game, what do you expect from a female? It's gonna be like Pavlov's dog. She's not gonna. When her teams lose or whatever, there's gonna be the added factor of the male chauvinist pigs that are in the media. I don't think is she gonna get some opposition from her players? Absolutely. But I don't think it's gonna be as much as it would be from the media as whatever.
Yep.
And see,
and the talk jockeys, the mouth jockeys.
As much as they've groomed her for the San Antonio job, I mean, do you really want that seat? It's the legacy.
Look at Van Gundy gone after 1 year, but his ass shouldn't have the job nowhere.
That's the other side of it. But see, death taxes and the Spurs making the playoffs. That's a hell of a thing to take over.
What gets me is that you got him 1 year, but the sad part about it is, gentlemen, when it comes to these other players out here, they are the ones that can really catch it because CP3, I don't know how in a ham sandwich he got the COVID-19, and money is already shifting right now. Then you got my man, the Claw from the Clippers with a bad knee. Now go back to these coaches. They already said about low management, they're making fun of that. But yet the same people making fun of that are pissed off when they don't see the players playing during the regular season. But when the playoffs come, you got 9 NBA All-Stars not playing right now. And LeBron
and one of the few that is playing, they're like, they try to make it out like, he's supposed to get 50 every night. Dumbass.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Hart, I don't know how he got that with a hamstring. I don't know how he did it.
I'll give this up to Nash. Just putting him out there, I think, was a psychological thing, I don't know if it was on that. I wouldn't say it would be on that scale. But again, just a mental thing of just putting him out there. And it took. And to be honest with you, the supporting cast, you know, came through. I mean, Green was as much of a monster as Durant was last night. You don't win that game without Green.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis needs to understand small ball, right? I mean by small ball is this. If you're going down the court, somebody throws you a pass, you're moving ready for a pass. There were a few times when Giannis was not ready for a pass.
Can I ask a stupid question real quick? If the man does what he wants to do since he's been in the league and he's the highest paid, how the Ham Sanders coach going to tell him how to play ball? Now, Doc can get away with it, but just look at the coach on the Bucks. Do you really think that he has the balls to tell this man how to change his game?
But to be fair, Giannis isn't the problem. Giannis still does not have Batman still does not have his Robin. Who's the next guy? Who's the next guy for
him? Yeah, you're right. That's right.
He doesn't even have an Aqualad.
I kind of disagree with that because
who's his number two guy then, Reg?
No, I'm talking about the whole team ball. Cause case in point, when the 76ers with World Be Free and them guys, I know I'm going back a little time, and the late, God bless him, Dr. Jack Ramsey and the Portland Trailblazers played team ball. They didn't have no Batman or Robin. They had an overall team.
But he doesn't even have that second guy, though. I mean, if you're going to talk team, you have to have at least another guy, right?
I guess we agree, because I'm just thinking with team ball together.
Rich, how many titles did Michael win before Scottie got there? I'll wait.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I'm saying that, but I'm looking
many,
at the overall,
titles,
the way the games
many,
are being played now.
But you know what? Even with all of that, you still have to have another guy. You still
have to have
another guy. Put it this way.
Put it this way.
Yeah. I've always said the ninth wonder in the world was LeBron carrying that piece of shit Cleveland team to the finals.
That's right.
But
he did it twice.
To be fair, he had much better players those second times around in the finals than
that's
he did.
Right.
That first time, he had Larry Hughes and Daniel pass me another burger Marshall. Come on now.
I know that, but my thing, T, overall, I still say that the way this game is playing right now, especially all these key injuries, you got to have a strong bench. And, again, just wait after this season is up.
But, see, again, it comes back to having a number two. We're basically saying the same thing, but it's just you still got to have – that other guy. I mean, Durant could have scored 50 last night, and they'd have lost by two, and it would have been an old Michael Jordan headline. Despite fill in number here, points by Michael Jordan, the Bulls lose so and so to so and so.
Well, I'll go back to the bonehead coach with the Milwaukee Bucks, because they only do the inside game. If they play the inside game, they clearly had it. But Giannis coming for three-pointers. Giannis was allergic to driving inside. He's want to shoot three.
He could be the defensive player of the year, and
he didn't want to check Durant. That's what got me. You the defensive player of the year,
but
and you know where
now,
around
now
to
see,
check.
Now see, now
and y'all both 7 foot.
Now see that. I put on the coach because I'm willing to bet that Giannis said. I'm willing to bet that Giannis said, "Let me get on this ass."
Yep.
Well, shit, he should have. Giannis, if he want to get in his ass, I'm telling the coach, "Look, man, we trying to win. The hell with that. Give me KD. We got to win."
Yeah.
And I blame the coach for that.
Yeah.
You know, you can see a whole lot of dumbass moves these coaches have made. As sorry as Charles Barkley was eating them donuts last night, I had to agree with his sigh ass when he said that was the worst offensive output coming down the stretch by the Milwaukee Bucks. They had an inside game going, and what they do, shooting for jumpers. I mean, I'm like the New Jersey Nets. Thank you, boys. Just give us the game so we can go to game seven and make more money. Come on.
Well, it may, it, tomorrow night may render a game seven useless because I think, now granted, they've held, you know, granted, nobody, the home team has yet to lose in this one, but, you know, one would think coming off of this, that, you know, KD is, you know, basically taking it to another level. And I personally, I think the Nets end this thing tomorrow night. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think Milwaukee's shot was, I mean, the fact that they blew the big lead up there, that just, yeah. You know, you can't,
that's,
you know, you don't
heart.
See, this isn't like losing a 17-point lead in January in a third game of a four-night
that's
series.
Right.
This is
yep.
game
yeah.
five.
This was a money game.
Yeah.
Thank
this is a game
you.
You
Thank
gotta
you.
Win. This is a game you this gotta win. Now you could possibly push it to seven, but let's put it this way. If they go back to Brooklyn.
Yep.
I don't give the Bucks a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give them a chance to win at all.
Brooklyn.
They should be put away. Oh. And if you're doing what you're supposed to do, yes, it should be a fair complete day. They get to Brooklyn,
yeah.
They get run off the court.
See, this is the time of the year now where you can't, you know, this is not, see, this is why guys sit out games in November and
yep.
January and March. This is the reason why you do that, you know, for all, you know, whether for those that hate the quote-unquote load management. And I go back
mm-hmm.
and forth with it, but see, I understand that, look, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been a marathon. It's never been a sprint
yeah.
in the NBA. It's always a marathon. It's games like last night. It's games like tonight in Philly and in Utah that, you know, this is where championships
grind.
Are won. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You gotta grind.
You can't, I mean,
and
if
is,
you can't push, like,
a,
if you can't play this time of the year now, then you basically need to be chucking donuts with Barkley.
That's right. Let's remember this. If this is playoff time, you know you're supposed to be of a certain mindset. The grind has changed altogether. The expectation is higher, and I've been saying this for the last few months. Look at what the Vegas Golden Knights do. Now, this is more than just physical talent. They were mentally prepared for a series which they could have played what might have been a superior opponent in the Colorado Avalanche. Nate McKinnon is a bad motherfucker, and his line with Landeskog and Lavonne, they can ball. I mean, well, they can skate. But the bottom line is, at 2-0, with the feeling that Vegas might have been run out the rink, Vegas tightened everything up. Defense got tight. All of a sudden, it's 2-2. Fifth game comes up. All of a sudden, Stone comes in, pops one in on the Colorado goaltender. In overtime, it's 3-2. And when they get back to Vegas, Vegas leaves no doubt. They crush them. Now, they got whipped 7-1 in the first game. They beat them 4-1 in the final. They're one round away from a Stanley Cup final. They're second in 4 years. You got to give the front office and everybody connected credit for having a team that mentally ready that they have done what they've done in this short amount of time. That's what we're talking about.
Vegas night. The people on the ice who will go through the war. I mean this. Marc-Andre Fleury, the Pittsburgh Penguins, gave up on him.
They did. They left him for dead.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll take him. We'll take him.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Me and Mike were talking about this the other night. At some point, that deal with the Devils got to be called in at some point, though.
You know that shit. Walmart got to have the red pen with blood in it ready to sign and shit because Fleury was on his way out. His skills had diminished.
No, Mike, what's that movie? Was it The Devil Wears Prada?
Oh,
well,
fuck yeah.
That motherfucker wearing Wrangler jeans in Vegas.
And CCM, yeah, for real. And what Fleury did gave everybody encouragement. His back line, Braden McNabb, everybody there on defense, they felt good about it. Marchessault came in a 30-goal score to get somebody else who's a rookie and scores 41 goals. All of a sudden, all this is coming together. And even after the first wave is turned away, they pick up Max Pacioretty, who I still think is a scumbag for when he tried to do the school band. But he's a bona fide sniper. Then they pick up Mark Stone from Ottawa. They got a solid fourth line with Ryan Reeves in there, making sure none of the stars get fucked over. Theodore
Maxwell,
mm-hmm.
Some of the guys
they basically got them for three-day-old pizzas.
Yeah.
Right, and they picked up Pete Trangelo from St. Louis. So now mm-hmm. they're really solid overall. They got credible depth. And they're going to go possibly into the Stanley Cup final with a battle-tested team. Because
not to mess up that narrative, but Montreal's up 1-0.
Oh, fuck yeah. Listen.
Yeah.
That's right. But they know for a fact, anybody plays Vegas, they know they are no fluke. Even though they're only 4 years old, they're the baddest toddler on the block in terms of franchise mm-hmm. preparation.
You can't even call them expansion anymore because it's been 4 years now. I mean, see, remember, St. Louis got into the finals because they bunched all the teams in the expansion in one conference. So it was just a matter of elimination. Vegas came in. Kicking down the door, punching the dog, smacking the maid on her ass and stealing food
mm-hmm.
and all that other stuff. And they said the thing about it is they still hungry.
That's right. They have established a mindset. If you come to Vegas, this is what we expect of you. Because they had moving parts from other places, and they came in, and it seems like every one of them fits thus far. They have four solid lines. They have credible goaltending.
Hey,
they picked up Robin Lehrer.
I know y'all rolling strong with hockey, but I just got to say, seeing Doc in that chair and the 76ers are just whooping the Atlanta ass by 20. It just said that, once again, you just can't go with coach. And I look at what's happened with the Clippers, and I apologize for changing the subject, but I'm just saying the way Doc was ran out of California, and now it's like he's getting the last laugh. So I just want to say hats off to Doc, man.
I'll believe that when they finish the job, because we know there's so much flow in the NBA where leads can fall like dominoes. So I'm rooting for Doc to get the job done, but, hey, there's too much ebb and flow when we get to the playoffs where shit can fall apart in a heartbeat. But I want to answer Gary's question from the beginning of the show. Gary, even if they hire two black coaches, that's more than any other sport. And I'm not trying to cheat the brothers and sisters out no jobs, but they have more of a better percentage of hires in basketball where they're not asking anybody for, the affirmative action vote and shit. You got to go through some procedures for football where they'll have lunch with you slip a $20,000 check on your plate. They're not doing that in basketball. At least they give you the appearance that they're doing it in basketball.
Some coach is going to bite people's mm-hmm. kneecaps off.
and Nate McMillan is a perfect example of that, because a lot of people gave up on, Nate was given another opportunity. Now, Nate has already proven what he can do. And The now
and to they fired that coach after 1 year with the games, the people that fired him, they hell with that franchise.
And well, see that whole that whole Hawks franchise. I mean, we could do an hour just on the history. You know, we got to remember this is the
and
same
the
franchise
faces,
back
yeah.
in the day that couldn't deal with Cleo Hill. This is the same franchise that tried to shove Maravich down our throats, even though they had Hudson and other folks. They've
mm-hmm.
always, their history has always been of remember this is the same franchise that not too long ago was more worried about the fact that they didn't know that no white people come to their games.
There you go.
Instead of worrying about
that, the owner said that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
If they market to the brothers and sisters, we will come and spend more money,
here's the thing. We all know Atlanta's the laziest professional sports franchise in the country.
Come
you
on,
know, they wouldn't go.
No,
they didn't support the.
I
they didn't support
know.
The Braves.
Miami ain't too far behind.
But you know what? Miami supports their. Miami clearly supports their teams. The Marlins withstanding, they support their teams. They truly
mm-hmm.
support their teams. Atlanta, that's a whole. I mean, remember Atlanta couldn't sell out when the Braves were in the middle of their 14-year run. They couldn't barely. They could barely sell out playoff games.
Yeah, no question.
So it's crazy. With all of that being said, it's gonna be an interesting off season to see, because these are the most, this is the most openings that I can remember in a while in the NBA. Usually, you don't
it's
have
2017.
It's like 5-6 teams that are looking for coaches. Now I know the league basically says, please don't do this during the, don't do this now. Wait till after there's sort of an unwritten rule of don't hire nobody until after the finals. But with some
mm-hmm.
teams, they're sort of like, shit, man, we need to get ready. We need to have our shit together so when the draft goes along, so we can do some stuff. But I will stand by. That of the six openings, I think five will be filled by black folks. I really feel that way.
I don't see that at all. I really don't.
We'll see. I'll put my neck out there as that. And again, I go back and forth with Dawn Staley because, look, she's in a great situation, in Columbia. Why deal with all of that, for lack of a better word, bullshit in the NBA?
Mm-hmm. I just think, all things considered, if they're so fired up that they would consider Dawn Staley, I don't know how much of it would be considered a publicity stunt.
Because of how a lot of people perceive the NBA, but that's a terrible hot seat to have, to be that first female head coach in the NBA. Because like
mm-hmm.
I said, he's gonna have to deal with more mess from the media and the fans. Than I think in the locker room. I mean,
thank
she's
you.
Going to deal with
this
the mess in the locker room. There's no doubt
about
that.
This ain't a Whoopi Goldberg movie. You're going to have a sister doing the job, then she better – this ain't Eddie. She's got to come in there and handle hers. Yes, we know she can do it at the college level. We know that. Pros is a whole other story, and it has nothing to do with Dawn's confidence. It has to do with the mindset that the organization would have to back her up. Then they figure Portland is out in the middle of fucking nowhere in comparison to a New York or L.A. So they figure if it works in Portland, it might work somewhere else like San Antonio. But do you really believe that the New York Knicks with that asshole at the helm would hire Dawn Staley as a head coach? No.
There's a better chance of me being the head coach than that's the case. And my first job, and the first thing I would do is I would slap Dolan in public, which means I'd only have the job for one day.
Yes. Serious bitch slapping. So, okay. Is the NBA ready for this? Professor, what do you think?
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not so much the league, Fred. I still think it's more so the media and the fans. I mean, she's going to get some pushback from players and stuff, but I think it's going to be more of the bastards at the gate that really have nothing to do with this that are going to give whoever they hire problems.
Well, see, the thing you got to look at when it comes to hiring a coach. First and foremost, only males can coach. If you really get down to it, only males can coach. Taking it to a step further, only white males can coach. Now, you know, just to show you where my head is right now, I just got to count the top 40 HBCU coaches in the history of HBCU basketball as far as total wins, top 40. Only 17 are women. In the top 10, only 3 are women.
Mm-hmm.
So, my point is simply this. The deck is stacked against a woman. I don't care if she's – I don't use that, you know, red and yellow, black and white. I don't care what color she is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women can't coach. Do you realize there are people who were second guessing Pat Summitt, Vivian Stringer?
Go
down the list, because the only real male coach is that gentleman up there from up there by where T Mac is living now.
At the
con of you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's a genius.
Yeah.
You know, listen, you know, you know, as you just go, just go down the list. Don Staley. I mean, you know, Don Staley and the other lady from Arizona, they were hot this year because this is Miss Negro Dama's time.
Fred, is this the Paul Mooney Negro Damas or is this the regular Negro? That's the one I'm hoping it's the Paul Mooney
or the Richard Pryor Negro Damas.
Same difference.
I don't care who she is, how great she is. She could come in and an NBA season is 82 games regular season. She could go 80-2, and some moron from ESPN most likely will minds that. Well, she was atrocious. She lost a game in the first half. She lost a game before the All-Star game, and she lost one after the All-Star game. They need to rethink their hire.
Exactly.
At the same time, going that far during the season, that tells you she has beaten, and she got 82 games in, right? So that tells you she beat every team, looks like it would beat every team in the league once.
There's Bertha and her sisters again.
They will never give Detroit a chance to do what she needs to do, and they will always be these second guessing, and they will do
that's
her.
Right.
And look at it this way: if they hire somebody black, it's going to be even worse because
you know
at
it.
Least. At least, let's see. Since I don't follow Division I teams that much either. But there's some. I mean, okay. let's just throw Viv the string out there for instance. Because, you know, Viv is the kind of lady, she's going to be a lady as long as she can. But Viv is not telling you to get the hell out of her face. And at her present, her present career status is such that, hey, she know that she don't got to work not another day in her life. Her
right.
book sold well. She can make speeches. She make good money in coaching. So she's stable.
Mm-hmm.
I think the coach is now more to keep busy because, the girl was in love, and when her husband died, she has yet to fully recover from it.
Yeah.
But see, when you take the time to look at who she is and where she's coming from, and I don't think she's ever won a national championship. So
no. She won a black national championship.
She won the 52.
She has two?
Yeah.
She won the Division II title at Cheney.
She won Division II. No, she was second place in that one.
But she did win the title. But
No. She lost to somebody. NC State. I know she lost in the finals.
Oh, okay.
She lost, okay. I think the final was 76, I just looked at the other day.
She is the only female to take four different teams
to the final four.
To the final four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they would rather not count the one at Cheney because what Cheney actually did, Cheney was a Division II school, but they were an independent. They were part of the Pennsylvania
that
Conference.
That was the AIAW back then
AIAW was canceled after 81.
Oh, okay.
Remember when the NCAA was told y'all gotta get off your ass and put the money up.
Mm-hmm.
So when the NCAA quote took over. That's when they came in and start chopping heads. They threw records out and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, there was enough coverage, and I actually saw part of the game when they played in that national championship game. But the AIAW, because you think about it, with the AIAW, women did their thing because men were going around and not doing what they were supposed to do. And you add to that the fact that when the women in the AIAW started acting like the men in the NCAA, what did the women do? What did black women do? They went out and started their own league too. They had at least one national championship because Jackson State won their title. They'll be the team that shall remain unnamed in my sincerity. But I'm working on the history of women's basketball right now anyway, and it shows it not only the initiative, but the resolve that the women. And this is how we got we got to tell our own story. Women from HBCUs play in some men because, like I was saying earlier. Most successful coaches at HBCUs and where women are concerned are men.
Mm-hmm.
Are they actually better coaches? No. But then you got to look at certain things. Like I was talking to somebody I know from Kentucky State. People don't realize when the NCAA took over in 1981, the first national championship for Division II schools was won by. Was won by Kentucky State, and Kentucky State beat Texas Southern, which was the first and only time two HBCUs have met for a national championship. Now, so they beat National Black. It's another alphabet soup. But anyway, there was also a black league where they held their own on. national championship with. I think they had 8 teams over 3 days, and these women have shown that they can do whatever is needed. You know, women couldn't fly planes, but at least two, I think, flew the space shuttle. You know, it might not mean nothing. Women have had to walk the same kind of road that men have walked as far as black men are concerned. And just about anything they said we couldn't do that we got a chance to do, we done it. Just about anything that they ever got the chance to do and were told that they couldn't do, they done it. So it's just a matter of time, because eventually people are going to realize that the NBA is just basketball. You remember how Coach McClendon used to say, you can't put but 5 people on the court and they can only occupy 5 spots. So all this stuff about how complicated the offense, how complicated the defense is, either you play an offense, either you learn how to shoot, drive, or whatever necessary on the offensive end, then you got to learn how to move your feet and not reach on defense. And watch what, you know, and the biggest thing is you got to tell yourself what you actually see. That's all playing defense is. Tell yourself what you actually see. If you that's Michael Jordan. Well, if I'm gonna play Matador defense on him, sure he's gonna drive to the basket uncontested. But we some of us are old enough to remember back in the day when such things as that happened. What happened? You might find you might have driven to the basket, but you may have been finding you may have found yourself getting up off of
the layup rule.
That's right.
So and it was done. It was not done in a hurtful way, but it was done to let you know, hey, I'm here, and I ain't going to. And see, those are the kinds of things that's missing in basketball now, because everybody talks about how well so-and-so shoots from the three-point line, but, I see that with the Globetrotters.
Yep.
I wish I could give you something a little more plausible, but, they will talk the whole thing under the table, under the bridge, under any and everywhere, and dilute the capacity of these women so bad that by the time they take over and get up and get ready to actually do what they need to do, everybody is second guessing everything they do because nobody knows what the true expectations are.
And I think that's a mutant.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Sadly. You're gonna have a lot of very good women who know how to coach good basketball, and they're gonna go out there and do a bang up job, and some butthole who can't walk, chew bubble gum, and piss in a pot, gonna come up
that's the truth.
At the end of the day, they second guessing to get to be what's true versus what the realities are.
That's right. And, Fred, you're so right. There's some meat in this sandwich for real. The big problem is I'm seeing this right now. I surely could be wrong, but the redneck factor really is going to get in the way of this.
Because especially now.
It will be the question of but. Yes. It won't matter how competent Dawn Staley is, because they'll make the aside that, she's good for a college coach. You know where that shit is coming from. And if Dawn decided to stay in college, she would do well either way. But the fact that they wouldn't even want to consider her flies in the face of something else altogether. And the first one, if we got to go Jackie Robinson here, the first one definitely has to have a certain mental capacity. It ain't going to work. If you can't have a Becky, and I mean Becky Hammon, coming in here and being someone who could take charge like that, they damn sure don't want no sister coming in there doing that shit. because I don't get the feeling that Dawn is one of those quiet sisters. I think she would say, "Fuck this, it's
oh,
my show."
No,
okay.
No.
Exactly.
I'm thinking. I'm thinking heels and mud hole and ass all in the same
hell
question.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. Listen, NBA. The NBA is in risk of fucking up their thing because they seem to grow faster over the last decade than any other sport, partly in credit to Marbury and expanding the market in China, the fact that everybody can play the game, that it's an easy game to get together in terms of equipment. All you need is a motherfucking ball, shirts, and skins. Let's go. But in the midst of all of that, they run the risk of screwing up their success because they're going to dumb down the game and redneck it by the inference of markets like Utah and Indiana where shit goes unredressed.
Boston.
And people have to be put the fucking check. Oh, you talking shit? Tell you what, the PA system, anyone who interferes with any fan during the course of the game will be fined $10,000 and a year in motherfucking jail. Enjoy the game.
And,
you know,
and why don't you just take the police dogs on them? Got to take everything.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. See, you can't get away with that in the basketball court.
They got on their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't get away with that in the basketball court. Some asshole white boy will come out on the field at Lincoln Field or Philly or whatever the fucking where the Phillies play, and he'll run around like an asshole, and they'll go, oh, yeah, and they'll clap for him and shit. No, zap his ass. Tase that motherfucker. Drag his ass off the court and leave his carcass.
Let the police dog go get them. Hey, Mike, here's
my thing.
Over history, how many police dogs have just maimed and just tore the flesh off of black folks trying to protest the right to vote?
Being
human.
That's right.
We see the pictures every time. Send the damn police dogs out there. Hell, they had no police dogs back in the day in Germany when they had their captain at
you,
tearing out the flesh and the nervous system.
The man is just
having dogs
fun.
On
it. Yeah, fuck that shit.
Let him know. Let him know the difference between regular and extra crispy.
No
yes,
shit.
Sir.
And if at first you don't succeed, fry again. Zap his ass so that nobody else will come the fuck out there on the field
happen.
And get in the way of the game.
It's white privilege. You're not gonna do it. Sorry, Professor.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee you, they gonna mess around, Professor, and look at it from a historical point of view. That look, we got the white
don't
supremacists.
Let me be working
I'm not
security
to
out
here. But we got white supremacists out here now being the number one threat to this country, as a certain Judge Gardner said, Attorney General. But yet we got people out here now with damn grenades, with armor-piercing bullets that are pierced metal. But yet people want to stand around and talk about their freedoms, and I don't wear no damn mask. Give me a break, man. It's white privilege. These guys have privilege.
Yes. It is.
Yep.
It is. Gentlemen, I want to move the discourse to a different subject. I was asked to come on Ricky's show last night, the African-American athlete, and they had a great show last night. We always think about Jordan before Jordan, but we never really think about LeBron before LeBron. Well, last night we were talking to somebody who represented LeBron before LeBron, one Spencer Hayward, and it was a really absorbing interview. We forget Spencer Hayward was born in 1949 in Mississippi, so he saw all that. And as we were talking to him, all these images came across. He was 6 years old. He knew what happened with Emmett Till. When all that shit went down and how they were trying to protect some of the younger black kids in case motherfuckers got a notion and said, well, let's just start killing all the black kids. And then, you know, he comes up. He ends up in Mexico with the basketball team. And through his exploits there, he sets the table for becoming the first hardship case in the NBA. Now, that, to me, is very similar to what happened with Curt Flood, because the basketball players weren't making that much money either until that door was open, and the Supreme Court had to open the door. So this was on the same lines as Kurt. So all these basketball players making serious coin now, they need to break something off to Spencer and to Kurt Flood. But I digress. But Spencer
Mike, you said anything about that so-called nickname of him being the Candy Man?
Shoot. You kidding?
Well, he probably did, but see, a lot led to that. You know, again,
yeah.
Cause and effect. Because
mm-hmm,
he was
yeah.
literally because he was literally a man child. And Mike, the Kurt Flood analogy is perfect because, you know, they went through stuff on and off the court. They were ostracized
yeah.
and a lot of things. Now there's also parallels with LeBron in the sense of him being like a man child because
yes.
he was a kid, but he had oh man. I mean physically
mm-hmm.
he was already there. And
mm-hmm.
the thing is, and again it shows you how the league has changed and progressed. So, you know, LeBron always had, you know, he had his quote unquote entourage, which included his mom
yeah.
and other folks. But
mm-hmm.
you know, Hayward didn't have that entourage. Bill Willoughby didn't have that entourage. Gerald Dawkins
nope.
didn't have that entourage. You know, you got to remember.
Right.
Hell, to a certain extent, Moses Malone didn't have that
Moses
when he
Malone,
was in the
I
ABA.
Thought Raymond Lewis in there too.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's funny because you know now you know the either the high school kids or the one and done kids. It's become, you know, somewhat, you know, the norm now. But you forget, like you said, the, you know, going back to what you were talking about in regards to the female coaches, the first
mm-hmm.
one always catches all the hell. And he and,
right.
and you know, I don't, someone did a biography on him a few years back. I don't remember who. But I would think that's got some incredible horror stories. And I'm sure even what he touched on last night probably just scratched the surface.
No question. And we got to also remember he was able to work his way into the pros through the ABA. So the ABA,
yeah.
again, is steps ahead of the Knicks because they're not trying to be the status quo and all of this stuff. Hayward ends up with the Denver Rockets, plays well there. Got notoriety, and after all the legal nonsense, he ends up in Seattle with the Supersonics, where he leads them to a playoff situation. But Hayward was averaging 30 and 20 at one point. Think about that. You know, here's a kid who's just coming in here, Bogart in the league, with 30 a game. You kidding me? So
yeah. Even LeBron, I don't even think LeBron was putting up those kind of numbers.
No, not early on. I mean, listen, this paradigm between the two of them, I think merits a lot of consideration because so many basketball players now are making money and it's not costing them a thing, you know, in terms of any sweat equity they had to put in from a moral standpoint.
And also, the game on the court, it was more of a big man oriented game. I mean, let's face
yeah.
it now, good, bad, or indifferent, it's a guards league now. It's
That's
a guards,
true.
You know, you look at what Phoenix is doing, you look at
mm-hmm.
how Atlanta made their run with Trae Young, and even
yep.
for all the mess that they give Ben Simmons, I mean, Ben Simmons has been balling. I mean, there's still now
yeah.
he's still there's still some things that he could improve upon, but for the most
mm-hmm.
part, he has shown. But again, it's more of a guard oriented league now. All of us, you know, we always felt like, and I still feel this today. You still
yeah.
need a good big man to win.
That's right.
You still need a good big man to win in this league. You can get so far, you know, without a quote-unquote true big man. But even with that being said, even if
mm-hmm.
it's somebody that's not a quote-unquote true big man, but at least will make up the role. I mean, say what you want about Draymond and his flying elbows and his flying feet. He does have a center's mentality. You know,
yes, he does.
Even with those Bulls teams with Luke Longley and in a dollar bill Cartwright, those guys, you know, those guys were, you know, now see, now I'm not gonna lie, Longley leaves a lot to be desired because one, he's a Euro, and he's not gonna play the same sort of defense. I mean, let's put it this way. I would think you would long for the days, and I'm dating myself, of old Tom Boerwinkel. As clumsy and awkward as he looked, he would be able to play a hell of a lot better defense than Luke Longley could ever dream of playing.
No question.
See, if these guys who are Euros, remember, they would talk the game differently from Americans. See,
absolutely.
Americans have this idea of we want either a big man slash or a big man who a man who plays big.
Mm-hmm.
They think everybody else should be a guard or want to be guard or whatever, and because of that, they still harken back to some of what basketball used to be like in the United States. But remember, Euros were brought up in the true McClendon system, and Eric would tell you his dad was like 6'6", you know, 6'6", 6'7", playing center, because Coach Mack taught the game, so every piece on the table is interchangeable. That's why a 6'10" guy can roll to the 3-point line and take a shot and hit, whereas in the United States, the average big man can't shoot past 5-10 feet. Well,
sure.
That's because of the mentality. That's the mental basis for how the game was taught. But you know, we learned in 1972, when even though it had not been fully developed as of yet, but you did have a semblance of the game of what the game was going to be like in Europe, because that's how the Russians played it. And because the Russians had those lieutenants who were 6'11" and 7'2", who could shoot not only free throws, but they could shoot 3-pointers. Well, if you're gonna counter that, what you got to do? You got to get you some big dudes who can shoot 3-pointers and free throws, and that's all.
Yeah.
That's all you has done. And so, because I mean, I talked to a young lady who played in Elizabeth City a few years ago, and she talked about, well, that's how the women play, you know. And she's like 6'2". Trahan is, I'd say, like 6'1", 6'2", and can jump out of the gym. But you know, her, you know, that was one of the things she had to switch from playing center, which she played in college, to playing like a three. And to play the three the way they played over there, she had to learn how to shoot from outside. Fortunately, she had a husband who was able to help her with that, plus, you know, other people around her. But, you know, the Euro game has more merit to it than you think. The only problem is you still got them jackasses up there in Connecticut who think that they're the only ones who know basketball.
Trust me, Fred. Everybody around here thinks that they know basketball, and it's like, please.
If you know the history of basketball, and if you know basketball from a historical perspective, it's easier for you to discern that, hey, them fools don't know what they're talking about. The only problem along that is they're the ones with the mic and a large Twitter following.
Yeah.
But you also have to turn around and look and say, okay, even with all of that, that don't make them right. Because, see, if you know the history of basketball, you know the game of basketball, the first thing that's going to come out of your mouth is, hey, that ain't right.
There you go.
Like Chris Rock, that ain't right.
That ain't right.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, just a little update, by the way. 3:09 to go, and here they come again. It's 104-98, Sixers. That big-ass lead has now become A small ass lead.
That's right.
Actually, it's 104 to 100.
You're 30 seconds ahead of me.
Yeah. And I'm saying, like, Doc, what are you doing?
And, they still got three whole minutes, and Cab Calloway is still shooting.
See?
No,
but we've seen this
and
before.
They're playing at home, too.
We've seen this before. It's like they can't change the tempo. Remember, in those days of the NBA, those house team days, Sonny Hill used to always scream about tempo.
Make that 104-102.
104-102 name. See? The Atlanta Hawks are doing a Pepe Le Pew on the Sixers. They're just slowly catching it.
And remember, they've already stolen. They've already stolen a game in Philly. So
that's right.
You know, if they go back home, if they go back and win this game, hell, they could put on Fannie Lou Hamer, Elliot Maddox jerseys and beat them on Friday night.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you gonna do?
From the hoop,
at least no popcorn man throwing no players. Yeah.
Division. Who cares?
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't like the NBA. You know, we know you don't like the NBA, Fred. I get it.
What do you say? Who cares? I love it.
Jack.
Oh Lord, have mercy.
But we do have to understand. Playoff sports and the packages sports offer in sports entertainment vary. You got to draw as many as possible, but you also not just entertain them, but you have to let them see the beauty of the sport.
Yeah.
There are flashes in between where the NBA is showing some of that beauty. NHL has been consistent with that. Their product seems to have gotten better playoff-wise every year. And even though basketball made some great strides, it seems like they're in a state of flux right now. And this goes back to what Gary was talking about hiring and all the other things that are into the overall mix. Basketball has to worry about a redneck factor because you can't have the fans calling you nigger when you jump into the stands after the ball and then saying shit to you that you know will start a fight. Now, it's surprising that the malice at the palace happened as long ago as it did, but it's surprising that that's the only time it got that bad, because there were pockets in the NBA where these motherfuckers were saying all kinds of shit to the brothers and nothing jumped off.
But my thing, is that... No, go ahead, T.
No, well, we've seen pockets of it. And it's been in the predictable places: Utah, Indiana, Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in. Yeah. I mean, it's still, you know, there are folks that still have that mentality of I just have a problem watching a bunch of Negroes run up and down the court playing hoops.
A bunch of niggers.
Yeah, and
you haven't included the fact that those Negroes are probably taking jobs from good players, some good basketball players.
Good God-fearing white folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And don't forget the foreign factor.
All six of them.
Yeah, but the NBA wants the fans to be breathing on the player's neck, and I've been in the NBA for. These fans want to feel the excitement, feel the sweat you coming down. I mean, hell, if a player 300 pounds come flying into a seat of an 80-year-old woman, first thing they're going to do is want to sue if the woman survives. I mean, it's crazy, man. The NBA needs to get off his high horse and back these people up. I don't care how much them seats cost.
Reggie,
somebody going to
get killed one
day.
You can't have it both ways, Reggie. Remember they were talking about being reactive and interactive and all this other shit, and then all of a sudden something happens like the malice of the palace. You can't have it both ways. We got Eric Satterwhite in the mix as well. And Eric, I know this thing about fan violence really hasn't endeared the NBA to really doing something about being proactive about it.
Hey, Mike, Atlanta just took the lead, Mike. I want you to know Atlanta just took the lead.
I'm not surprised.
Your day.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. But, yeah, Eric, they've allowed this atmosphere to present itself, rather to present itself. So do you think they're going to be able to extricate their way out of this and clean this up before it goes stupid?
Well, I mean, first they spent so much time with, you know, the fictitious thing called Bubble, which was NBA AAU tournament, right, because that's really what it was. Then they pimped out the players with the so-called, you know, BLM and all the names of the jerseys. Remember that? Everyone had a message, pride, unity, say my name.
Which all had to be approved by the NBA office.
Correct. What has that done for any of those circumstances? Zilch. Nothing. And it always goes back to the circumstance where brother, you know, Malcolm Little, you know, to the masses, born as Malcolm Little, prominently known as Malcolm X, died as Malik El Shabazz, is prominently saying, you know, and people can Google this on YouTube, where he says entertainers and athletes are not leaders of communities. He goes, what white actor, comedian is the leader of their community? Zilch. They're not even referred to that as such. So this fake imagery was such a play job because, you know, I was one of the people saying this, they're being played with this shit. And then there was those, oh, they're using their platform. Look what they're doing. What did it change? Zilch. Right? And so what it did do is piss off a whole lot of high season ticket paying white folks with that woke shit. So they set them up to be more enemies of that target. Like, man, these motherfuckers are acting this way, and we paying all this damn ticket for these salaries? I'm giving it to them. You know, it's the so-called woke NBA that failed miserably. And there was all this co-signing on what was up. I'm here to say right now, today, you can't even remember what was the logos on those courts and what those jerseys said unless you look them up, right? It has nothing to do with the impact of your memories, banks at all. But you do remember, you know, when Spencer Haywood stood up or Kurt Flood or really took a stance that shifted the equation. But you don't remember none of that crap from last year, do you?
Absolutely.
You know, well, we're going to sit out and we're going to walk out. And we're, the Donald Sterling hoax, what impact does it have today?
I agree.
Okay, so when you have that, remember, you know, people who are targeting this stuff are remembering this shit, right? And there were these right-wingers or whatever they may be, but it's a premise of what was put out there as something that's a fake. You know, we always say be careful to what you align with. Be careful what petition you sign on. Be careful what group you join. Right? Because if they're not really walking in like they're talking it, they may be getting pimped out by somebody else. And doing that. And so all of that highlight stuff that was done in that, you know, makeshift bubble thing, and, oh, well, the player's going to, you know, revoke and they're not going to play. Well, that would have made a stance, but people remember that one. But no, they put that on the back of their jerseys. You had a guy who is from the Ukraine. And he's got a black fist on the back of his jersey. Everyone knows that's a hoax.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's symbolism. So, you know, so the thing is, the NBA has been just sinking in its public appeal. It's been sinking in its ratings. It's been sinking in all those other aspects. And they're trying to get together. They lost the China money. There was players aligning with China that were getting associated with being tools of Red China, right? And then the NBA made their statements, and they lost that revenue there as well. So no one's watching or really paying attention. You know, and so if you get the Utah Jazz, Atlanta Hawks finals, then they're really going to, what, 1%
audience,
right?
Boy, that's the big thing.
You know, 1%, 1% audience. The NFL can survive any type of Super Bowl, you know, because they're NFL, right? I mean, it could be the It could be the Detroit Lions against the Cleveland Browns, and they're going to have, you know, numbers on Super Bowl Sunday.
Hey, Eric.
Not the NBA.
Hey, Eric, you know the good old boys want to see them beat them Negroes, man. Come on now. You know the good
old
boys.
Well, you know, we can lock into that, those type of scenarios 24-7. I mean, you know, they never kind of typically go away. But at the same token of time, that's not really the true story. That's where a person is expressing their individual experience and their bitterness because they see everything there, so they use these platforms to lash out and shit because it didn't work out for their careers. They didn't become the successful person that they thought they could be. And anyone who has a motley look, even of their own, that may have an opportunity, they're going to try to shut it down. You know what I'm saying? So we have all these problems of, you know, identity and connecting this, that, and the other. So what the league is doing, yeah, you got some nuts in there. They fill them up. They're probably all fueled up. I guarantee you, every one of those arenas that where players went off, they probably sold alcohol.
You know they
did.
No,
the Coke T-Mac.
No, how dare you?
We got Patrick
Broadbent
and Patrick. I want to ask you, what's the likelihood? What do you think is the likelihood of Utah and Atlanta in the NBA Finals?
Atlanta looking good now.
Good evening, fellas.
What's up, man?
That's first of all.
Good.
Well, as it appears now, since Philadelphia is down by 2 points with 10 seconds left.
Oh, Atlanta got the ball.
Philly is going down tonight.
Yeah, 107-104, 10 seconds.
If Doc Rivers is on that bench, they're going to lose. They're going to blow it.
Yes.
Well,
you think they're gonna fire Doc after 1 year?
No, they won't fire. They won't fire him because it wasn't 3-0 or 3-1 like it typically is.
Oh,
when
God.
He had a 3-1 lead or something
like
that. Talk radio
Philly tomorrow.
What's affected, and it's actually has a solidification in terms of the injuries everybody has. I'm taken back by the amount of injuries that people are having and acquiring. It's a long season. That wear and tear has begun to take its toll on players.
The
training that NBA players do is not holistic. First of all, second of all, you can overtrain.
Yes.
A lot of
that
playing all the time and doing these certain exercises advanced, they're not built for longevity because the reality is if you look at, you know, again, you can do comparisons. This is where you can do comparisons that are pretty accurate. If you take 70s players and 80s players and 60s players, no private jets, no personal trainers, no specialized shoes, no specialized workouts, no dietitians, and they could play 82. In Chuck Taylor.
Mm-hmm. And also the backlash from this past season where there was only a handful, you know, what did they basically get, a month and a half off and they were right back?
They were complaining again about they stretched the season, they opened the space, they extended the All-Star break, right? But Bird and them, when they went 40-1 at home that year to Casey Jones, he literally played 6 players that entire season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
And they won the NBA title. But and then when you think about the Philly teams, you think about the playoffs, you always see Julius and the best players always running through the whole playoff game, and there's a lot more physical game back then.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? The way that Kurt Rambis got taken out by McHale, and that's a felony on the street.
Oh, that was a clothesline.
That's a felony on the street. But in the NBA, there was no foul, and then all that happened. McHale stayed on the floor, and Rambis went to the free throw line after the little shove around.
Yeah.
So the league was way more physical. There was hand checking. I mean, the Pistons went out from day one looking to beat down. But Isaiah, Joe D, and all those guys are always in the finals healthy.
Yeah.
It's different. Yeah. These players, it's the training systems that they're using is not holistic. And it's not built for them at all. You can do more physical things, but they can't last.
I love it. Colin is giving Philly fans a finger. I love it.
Yes, I mean, Philly
so
went down. You know, they're going to lose this
God,
series.
They're so pissed off. I'm sorry, Mike, man. To see these guys give it to the Philly fans is just great. I love it. I love it.
What was packed? I mean, the injuries that you see for the so-called just for the – But the so-called stuff, I mean, these guys are going to protect them salaries, man. They're not going to push it.
Yeah. It just goes to show. I think it's the thing that I was talking to somebody about it yesterday, actually last night, is the fact that in the league we have, in the NFL we have parity. You never think you find parity in the NFL, I mean, in the NBA. Well, it's about to happen.
Pretty much. And see, the whole thing is about how you have to have a good team in New York, L.A., and Boston for the league to thrive. Please.
No, you don't.
Stop that.
No, you don't.
Well, I mean, that word thrive is really interesting because, again, I mean, no one should even remotely try to plant the fiction that this is a thriving couple of years for the NBA. Ratings are down. I mean, all that sort of trajectory, all that's down. That's not saying the game's not good anymore, this, that, and the other. The woke NBA was such a turnoff, too, to a large portion of the fan base. China turned off the tube on the international level on certain levels. So these are not the halcyon rating days of the NBA. That is pure fiction, and the statistics will support that, right? So I think as a responsible show that, you know, you have here, you know, Mike, this, that, and the other, to present that, I don't see what any other option other than those facts. I couldn't understand the purpose of that other than the hope that so many people are interested in sports to that level that they would do that. The pandemic turned people down to sports as well, you know, because they had other things that they wanted to do option-wise as well. And the NBA has just been, you know, backsliding left, right, and they realized that the woke thing that they were promoting really hurt their brand.
I said for the women have done a tremendous job and impact that they've done. Their numbers weren't high, but they've established a consistency of how they feel and how they want the league to run.
I mean, they're women. They have a motherly vibration, and it comes off as authentic.
This week, I'm having the 25th year. I was there the first year when I covered the league the first 3 years, and I said if the things work out right, the league can survive, even though they had some rough times. But in 25 years, they've done a tremendous job, and considering how they represented what was going on last year, they've still survived. Mm-hmm. I give them a lot of credit.
And the basketball.
Well,
the basketball,
I mean, it's easier brand to do, right?
Given credit for.
It's what eight teams. They started with what, about 20 when they first started. So they're down to a manageable number.
Yeah.
And for the ladies to make money, they go overseas because they're not getting into WNBA.
Yeah,
they shorten the season.
That's the only drawback. That's the only drawback. Yep. There
right.
it is.
They
shorten
the season.
They made more money.
Yeah. And I mean, I talked to Lindsay Harding, you know, she's now an assistant coach with the Kings. You know, she was she came out of Duke, and she talked about the branding and how they wanted to push the ignition, you know, with women's basketball as well as there's some others. You know, Lisa Leslie, this, that, and the other, you know, when they were down there. And so, you know, it's still out there, still a form of basketball. It's really huge to the LGBT community more than it is in the straight community for sex-wise. And, again, that's not a knock. That's just what it is. Because they realize they could promote. That's what it is.
They realize that
they could promote to that community.
And the funny thing is, Eric, those early years, they literally and figuratively shied away from it. But like you said, that's their
difference. Yes,
Seattle did market with LGBT, whatever they want to say, in mind, because Sue Bird was their star. They had, like, date nights and things like that.
Yep.
So they were thinking about
the Sparks. I mean, the Sparks are big time in L.A. with that.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The big man, they had...
Go ahead, Patrick.
No, I was going to say one of the things that when, because I covered the Liberty, one of the big things that you said that they were trying not to acknowledge that, but that was, there was a base of that there, particularly in the first four or five rows of every game.
Were they worse than the men, Patrick? Were they worse than the men with the cat calls?
No. I'm going to tell you something. No, I'm going to tell you what the killer was. I'm going to tell you this. The killer was, you see, about five or six deliciously fine, exotic-looking honey. You said, when the game was over, at least have them go by and look and say hello. But you can forget that.
It is a unique league in the sense that the only league that players from the opposite team marry one another. Then the associated drama that has come with that publicly in so many cases.
Same
problems.
Of course. of course, I mean, you know, well, we can't even put it against the men because, you know, the fraternity suits and all the other stuff that can go on. We can be here forever. So, you know, we're not disclosing anything, something, you know, unique to sports.
When you're a man, a woman tells you that woman makes me happy than you, that's a blow to your ego. I don't care nobody.
Reg, I never had that experience, brother, so I can't relate.
I don't want to be in that situation.
Reggie, hold on a second. What I'm speaking on now has to do with what happened with the sport being marketed when the Women's League started. Yeah. The Houston Comets won the first championship and stuff like that. But Houston never entrenched itself as a basketball city for women's basketball. Seattle did. And they were consistent, at least with marketing that. So they survived all those franchises that were in and out and stuff. With the NBA, during the growth period, Golden State became a landmark franchise because they could market the team and the league without New York or Los Angeles, even though we knew that they were there as linchpins. So now the script has been flipped. We don't have that now. And because of it, everybody on both sides, men's and women's basketball, they're gonna lose from this because whatever they were doing right, something has gone into the mix
Look here, Mike. In terms of what you said, let me make a correction. At the beginning, at the formative years of this league, the Houston Comets were doing quite well. They were doing quite well. I'm going to tell you that now. When I left in that, as a matter of fact, one of the guys he left in that, he went down to help consult with the Comets. And that guy had, I forgot the citizen's name. Oh, God. I can see the face.
Cynthia Cooper, Tina Thompson.
The problem is, the Swoops, who was a superstar with the league, made the shift to go the other way, and it hurt her career, and I think it's unfortunate.
It's the public modicum, because when Swoops came out of Texas Tech and took them to the national championship, we ain't seen Texas Tech since. Swoops could literally, almost be, a rotation player for a weak NBA team. She was that nice. And the thing is that she was married when she first came to the league, and she was pregnant, she had a child, and it was that wholesome story, and she's going to give birth and this, that, and the other. Remember, the public thing, those things shift the equation. Now, of course, you and I and everyone here, we really don't give a F who or what someone sleeps with, but the point of the matter is that's not public opinion in the public paradigm like sports, right? We already know how to call it, especially being a sister and being a black woman. So you're going to have to pay black people anti that too as well. as well as support what. And so when you looked at that equation and how they, you know, went to that particular, you know, party, then we know Griner, when she came out of Baylor, you know what I mean?
Yes. Oh, my God.
You know, the drama
you know
associated with
she
that. And then, you
come
know,
home,
people who have to really announce their likes in terms of sexuality, you know, most of their star players could come out, you know, and say, hey, this is my story. This is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So it only creates a certain kind of audience that's going to watch that, right? We're still women's college basketball is still way more powerful than
Washington League. You got to see Washington, man. When they had the games
and
with
the Sacramento
Washington,
Monarchs,
they
won a
whole row,
and they no longer exist.
Oh,
you know,
yes,
and they no longer exist. You know, Yolanda Griffin, you know, Ruthie Bolton, Holyfield, you know, Tisha Pinachero. You know, is real cool. You know, I've done some business with Ruthie, and Yolanda's done some coaching out here. You know, they won a WNBA championship, but Lucy folded them because of the finances.
Now, also, I have to say this because it's true now. The aspect of how you present yourself sexually has a racial connotation to it because Nancy Lieberman, as the executive of that league, most of them at the level that I know of and I saw, 1-6. All right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Got to keep that in mind. Because Nancy Lieberman is still, and I give Nancy Lieberman can play. But there's some other women who I do know, particularly with the garden. I know another one from Nets who left the garden to go run the marketing for the Liberty. I mean, they had their protection, and they were able to thrive within that orbit of production. Now,
good word. I mean, it's a niche product.
The WNBA
is a niche product who markets to a niche crowd, you know, and because, you know, when you look at what Catchings, you know, out of Indiana, you know, and some of the other sisters that can really go, you know, Shamika Holtzclaw, right, when she came out of Tennessee, then she ran in the
Flowers,
Lusty Caps with her girl, and all
that
shit that went with
crazy.
That, you know, fired into another WNBA's players, busting calves, I mean, shit, you know, and so it's kind of like, really a niche product. The basketball is what it is. People have to personalize. They do what they do. But, you know, these personal services contracts, the NBA players have and how they protect as much as they can. The public, like, it doesn't happen in the WNBA, which leaves them open for that. But we also see in these dramas, we usually see these stories around sisters more than we see any other ethnicity.
Yep. Yep.
Absolutely.
I'm going to throw it to the last one in. It's hypothetical. But I had to, a while back, get on the guy when, again, we have folks, you know, just people coming with these lists, who's the greatest or whatever. Please. They were talking about, and I like the girl from the Phoenix. Oh, God.
Taurasi.
Taurasi.
Yeah.
She's the best player of all time. I said, stop. Taurasi. I put in the top 5, 6, 7 balls, but, you know, if Shel Miller would have been in the league at the time this league started, you'd have seen the difference.
Oh, Lord.
Exactly, because the McGee twins and Pam McGee, who's JaVale's mom, very familiar with Pam. She was a school teacher with my kids.
Didn't she?
School. Yeah, Pam was a prep coach. And sat for a minute, and you know, she was one of my son's favorite math teachers. You know, to keep it 100 and for full disclosure. And so the thing is that, you know, Pam would talk about those SC days, and remember, Cooper was on those SC teams too.
Exactly.
No one remembers Cynthia because Cheryl was just so dominant.
Cheryl
had those knee injuries, you know, and so she couldn't push the ignition.
When she passed the
yeah,
command,
she, you know,
hit
I mean,
the ground
I mean,
every
Cheryl
time
and,
ball.
Yeah. Cheryl put it down. I mean, obviously, you know, Reggie took so much heat coming up because, you know, they used to always say you're not better than Cheryl, this, that, and the other. Or,
I
you know,
got 84 one game.
Back then,
yeah,
you know,
I got 104 one game.
Yeah, she did. Lisa Leslie dropped 102 in high school.
Before
going to SC as well.
I didn't know that.
She put up 100.
She did drop 100.
She put up 100. You know, just like my boy's son, Wagner, you know, Milt Wagner's kid, you know.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
one,
yeah,
one
right. And guess
famous.
What?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something on Wagner's son. Wagner's son now in Jersey is in the top
yeah,
five
yeah,
in the state.
Yeah, DeJuan's son, right? DeJuan's
yes,
son.
Right.
And he play,
that's
and
right.
He plays for, don't he play for Brunson? Brunson coaches Camden, right?
Yep.
The father, the point guard for the kid for Dallas. Yeah, Brunson out of Temple. Is Camden.
Oh, yeah, Ricky. Yeah, Rick Brunson.
Ricky, yeah, he coaches
Camden. Temple kid.
Yeah, and he coaches DeJuan. Milt and I go back. So Milt, you know, DeJuan did. So DeJuan gave him 100. He's New Jersey's prep all-time leading scorer, right?
Mm-hmm.
DeJuan Wagner,
mm-hmm.
right? So he's the prep leading scorer. And I know in Cali, the kid I coached out here, and he went to Duke, DeMarcus Nelson, is Cali's all-time prep leading scorer, too. You know,
oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah, and to this day, you know, I talked to his dad one time. I said, you know, because he signed with Duke, you know, when he was a sophomore, right? And I talked to his pops. Like, listen, I mean, would you still send him to Duke? Because he told me Krzyzewski came to him during a practice while DeMarcus was there, right? Because DeMarcus was Cali's all-time prep leading scorer. And Krzyzewski turned him into, like, some kind of defensive guy or rebounder, dude, right, with no offensive presence, right? So you would have never known that when you watched him play at Duke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, looking back on things, you know, I mean, DeMarcus is on his way out, you know, he started with the Warriors, you know, and I said, would you still have a system to do? He said, nope. I said, why? He said he would never done it because he wasn't free. He said, Krzyzewski approached him at a practice and said, Mr. Nelson, you should be proud of me. And he said, okay, what do you mean by that? He says, for what I've done for your son's development. He said, I'm going to fall off the ground. I said, well, that's the fuck what you happen when you go to the Duke Kingdom. And
yeah,
that guy
that's
got his name on the court, right? Coach K Court? I mean, please.
True.
Who wouldn't have an ego out of bounds with that kind of crap?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know something? That's part of the problem. And it's quite known, but sometimes it has to be emphasized. Mm-hmm. You make a very good point. You know, sometimes it's better go to a school that might not have the cachet that you think that can get you on TV to where you can develop and the coach can work with you. I'm going to tell you the perfect case here.
Exactly.
The perfect case. People can dog Calipari all he wants to, but somehow he gets his voice to play. You know, and sometimes you need to go to school to do that. And unfortunately, you know, parents get involved. And
they wanted
they
all
see,
that dookie
and,
shit, right? You know, blue
and
dad, all
see,
that.
And not what's best for the kid. And right now, you're talking to Wagner's son, they're trying, Rutgers is actually trying to talk to him. Now, when his father was
Wagner,
there,
he's a sophomore or junior. Is he a sophomore or junior now, Pat?
I think he's a junior now.
All right.
Oh, so he's got another year.
Okay.
Yeah. They got some time. They got some time.
Yeah.
They got some time.
Yeah.
They got to pull the Manchurian.
That's what happened in New Jersey basketball, high school basketball, when St. Anthony shut down. Get out of there early.
Yeah.
That wasn't his fault. That was the lawsuit
for the harassment.
And,
yeah.
Wait, and the Archdiocese of Newark, those bastards of all, well, they can print money and they wouldn't give St. Anthony any money. Come on, yo.
Patrick, are you telling me that the church was involved in some felonious dealings here?
Let the church in
for Ken.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that, you know.
Patrick.
I'm going to tell you what happened.
Hey fellas, I mean, to quote Paulie Walnuts from The Sopranos, hey, what are you doing? We're starting to cut more corners in the Catholic Church.
How about that?
The problem is that property is located downtown Jersey City, which is one of the most gold mine pieces of real estate in the country. They sold the building because they're going to put it on a high rise.
Oh, I get it.
That's what they're
high rise is.
I mean, the same
thing happened at Paramus Catholic, where what's that dude that used to do the cha-cha for the Giants, the receiver, after he used to catch and shit?
Victor Cruz.
Yeah, he went to Paramus Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and some other dudes, right? And Paramus Catholic was a powerhouse, but they closed down, too. And then when Kevin Boyle was running St. Patrick's, right?
St. Patrick's.
And he went down to Montverde Academy in Florida, where, you know, they win all these mythical high school national championships because he, right, Monverde. And so he was coaching there for a number of years. And so
he's
down, I was kind of things like that.
He's down there loving him. They set him up with a campus. They set him with a beautiful setting.
He gets 150K, right? His official title is booster. His official title for 150K a year, prep coach, is booster club manager.
And denture wearer.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Kevin, he was a former AAU teammate of mine. Now, Kevin's got to hustle because what? Embiid, Simmons, Kyrie Irving,
somebody
else I'm missing, they were his players coming out of high school.
Yeah,
he's missing somebody else.
Yeah, D'Angelo Russell.
Not McGrady, was it?
Yeah, D'Angelo
Russell.
Russell. There it is. D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
There it is.
That's D'Angelo Russell, okay.
Sure,
so McGrady for.
Because I play pickup games with Kevin when he's at St. Peter's.
Yeah, he was at St. Peter's. He started off at Seton Hall.
Yeah, they went to St. Peter's College. But
was Duquette coaching them then?
No, that was Duquette last year when I got there.
Someone came after Duquette. Okay, got it.
Okay. He got there with Florio there.
Okay. So, is Snyder High still open?
Yes, Snyder High is still open. You know why?
All right, okay.
Snyder High is open because on top of Snyder High, we have an $8 million TV studio. That's why TV stays open. On the fourth floor.
Hey, Pat, you ever run into Rafael Addison?
Let me tell you, does tuna fish ever run into mayonnaise?
I love it.
I've done several shows with Raph.
We had a Biggie show every year until about a year
ago. Cool.
Raph's a good brother. Raph's a brother that you know, I respect Raph so much because Raph did the right thing for himself. You see, one thing about a lot of NBA players. Let me step back. One thing for some NBA players who get lost in the sauce with the money and things that's available to them. Raph came from humble beginnings in Jersey City and realized, my mama worked too hard for me to get my butt where I'm at. So Raph, what he did, he got his money, he invested in homes and property for himself. His daughter became all-state as a basketball player, got a full scholarship. Raph is only thing about Raph is the fact Raph went and got his master's and phys ed. They should have given him a position of authority to develop athletics because he had the ability to do it. But unfortunately, we have too many educators who are involved who don't understand the fact of having somebody with that presence who could help and uplift the whole athletic system. But they didn't. Let me get me started.
Patrick, I love your enunciation because that's just how they, you know. That's just how they
don't
think.
Get me.
That's just how I can imagine. I can imagine.
I'm to that point, OJ. OJ Simpson once told his lawyer, Carl Douglas, you need to work on your enunciation, Carl. You need to project that. And get the crust out the side of your mouth when you're representing. You got too much spittle, Carl.
And the thing about it is, and guys, I'm willing to, look, there are more Rafael Addisons out there, but see, it doesn't fit the narrative.
There you go.
It doesn't fit the narrative. There are plenty of them.
I can tell you two brothers right now because they weren't, you know, so-called NBA superstars, right? But they were long-term NBA players and put in some work and some really good dudes like H. Boone Coons of mine, Billy Thompson out of Camden, doing things in Boca Raton, Florida.
Junior
Mike Richmond. Brown out of East Orange, New Jersey,
Junior Brown,
yes.
Junior Brickman,
who has played for Greg Tynes, so let's do the Jersey
Fred. Yes.
And then, you know, my man Anthony Campbell now, but Tony Campbell, T.C. Top
Tony Campbell. I know Tony Campbell.
Oh, yeah, I remember Tony Campbell.
He was at Ohio State,
That's my main man.
Don't forget Junior Bridgman, who has more money than God.
So when you start taking it out the region and start looking at it from, you know, an overall level, I mean, there's some brothers doing some real lovely things, man.
Absolutely.
Like a cat like Warwick Dunn, man. I mean, Yes. Let me work done. I mean, yes. Can you do better than work done in terms of really contributing?
Yes.
Yeah, really.
Yes.
Absolutely.
There were some brothers doing some good stuff. But again, it ain't the ghetto story that his father was a drug addict and his mother was in poverty.
Oh,
I
can't stand it. They love that shot.
Mm-hmm.
But I must digress for a hot second because I'll take enunciation for 400. And we got D.O. Land on that bit of the mix as well. Gentlemen, we talked about Spencer Haywood briefly, but Spencer Haywood really is looming to be a larger figure now, knowing that what we see from LeBron very much was Spencer early on. He saw a lot of shit. I mean, he saw Emmett Till murdered. He was in Mississippi and all that stuff, and he laid something on us last night that really blew my mind. He said they were actually trying to raise a group of super cotton pickers. Think about this. Remember the shit that was said about the black man and his black babe and making the big black buck and all that shit?
Mm-hmm.
He was telling that shit straight up. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was admitting to being a super cotton picker in that same vein.
Mike, to your point, we're going to stay there. The super pocket, another super cotton picker that was raised was Jerry Rice.
That's right. Yeah, right down there. Yeah.
Jerry Rice,
exactly.
Bill Walsh. Okay, what was the brother? Oh, man. So you had in 68 Olympics, right? You had, Tommy Smith and the other brother.
John Carlos.
Okay, so it was Tommy Smith. Who grew up as a super cotton picker, to Mike's point. Literally, he talked about how incredible he was in cotton picking during that time frame. And guess who signed him, and he didn't make it to training camp. He got injured. He caught one pass. He got injured in the tackle, Walsh, when he was with the Bengals.
Really?
So he was, Walsh. He talked about it in the documentary. Walsh signed him, and he caught one pass because he knew about those soft hands from picking cotton, and he knew about that speed. And he duplicated that with Rice, so it was he who was the template for Rice.
Wow.
And coming from that reason why he wanted to draft him.
And then
he turned around and tried to duplicate it again
with my man, Ronaldo Nehemiah.
You know what I'm saying? And Skeets, right, he had a few moments, just that and the other, but Skeets had no cotton picking experience. Yeah.
But also Jerry Rice did this. Jerry Rice was his father, who was a bricklayer. That was another thing that they had added to him also.
True. Yeah. I mean, he had strong hands from that. But Jerry Rice was picking cotton.
Good Lord!
During the Mississippi Valley State.
I'm not surprised, guys. You know, it goes back to the thing that I'm irate about, and Malay has controlled me because I'll get to cussing in a minute. This notion of Texas and across the country want to cut out the history more. They want to stop racism and don't want to go into the history of African American and African Americans we do in the country. These are the type of things that they leave out. And I was just going through a piece about the University of Alabama machine unit. I said, what's a machine unit? Well, a machine unit at Alabama to this day is a group of people who involved in student activities that can dictate how your perception as a player and a person is. I never knew anything about that.
Sure.
Huh?
It shows you what – and that's what I'm saying – not knowing about what goes on, like I said, if someone has education, you can work with them. If someone doesn't have it, you can present tyranny and stupidity, and they'll follow that to the hilt.
Yeah.
Hey, so Mike, talk about that super cotton pick.
Seriously, the theory was that the big black buck would get paired up with the big black mate, and they make these big black babies, and all this shit that Jimmy the Greek said, and everybody thought he was fucking crazy.
That was true.
This is exactly what went down. They were trying to make the $6 million man bigger, faster, stronger, pick more cotton, all that shit.
Exactly.
Spencer Haywood actually said these words. I mean, it blew my mind because we knew it was like that. But
to have somebody who was there part of this admit this. This was some heavy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The breeding policies. Listen, man, we talk about how they breed racehorses. Come on.
Oh, please.
I mean, come on now. Where'd they get that shit? Brothers and sisters was not raising thoroughbreds.
Jenny talks about this all the time with horses. Mm-hmm. Same fucking thing. You work from a certain stock. There are certain bloodlines that work where horses are bred for endurance, for strength,
mm-hmm.
for speed.
All that shit they were talking about was put out there, right on Front Street.
Man.
And you know what they still say when you watch any collegiate professional sports with a brother? What a stud.
Well,
mm-hmm.
right.
What's the definition of a stud? He's a horse.
Yeah. A breeder, right? The breeder's cup.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you guys surprised by this? Don't y'all, professor? Did any of you all hit the community? Mandingo?
Yeah.
Remember the scene on the block where the woman walked up and basically put her hands in his pants?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jim Norton was in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Think back. See, sometimes white folks are telling you stuff, most stuff about them and how they feel about you with
mm-hmm.
what they say and what they do in movies and TV and all these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to stop looking at everything as entertainment and look at it as them revealing their true selves. Because they've been telling us this for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that Mandingo movie was just one of them, one instance
mm-hmm.
of it. And
that's right.
That was a documentary. Looking at what they tell us, not just at face value, but what it means to us educationally. Because if you go back and somebody would use the term, you know, we were just talking to the young lady a few weeks ago about bloodlines and all this kind of stuff. Well, remember, black folks was livestock. Look at black folks as livestock. They ain't want
mm-hmm.
you needed somebody who could carry a 200-pound or 100-pound bag of cow feed and hog feed and whatever, along with big bags of fertilizer and to tote that barge and. Lift that bell, go to the polls and vote, and we'll put you in jail. Let me go back before my mother sits up and pops behind here. You do not need a bunch of little micro Negroes. You need some big, strong, stocky. You need linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Put it that way. You need linemen, offense and defense linemen. You don't need nobody. I know all y'all are non-farmers. So let me educate you about some stuff. You got to be able to chase down a horse or a mule, chase down a cow. Hogs ain't going to wait on you. They're going to run from you. So you got to have somebody who can chase all them things down, wrestle them to the ground, and get them in a harness or whatever and bring them back. That's what you need for a true farm, especially a plantation. You don't need that. And so they just take that same model that they use back in the day
mm-hmm.
and on horses and cows and everything else that they wanted to breed.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this is why everybody is so against the 1619 information that's coming out now. Don't tell nobody, but we right in the middle of that bullshit right here in North Carolina right now.
One of his sisters
who had a major hand in that, they're talking about her right now on the news. Well, this sister is one of the ones who wrote one of the pieces that came out in, I want to say, the Wall Street Journal. Anyway, they normally just rubber stamp tenure on each other.
And keep on picking, right?
She wrote
mm-hmm.
this.
But all of a sudden, there's no tenure.
But it just so happened that this lady, they not only this guy who gave the $25 million speak up and say, we need to rethink this and all this other crap. But But he did come out and say, I just told them they needed to rethink it and relook it. I didn't say they shouldn't hire her, and I didn't say they shouldn't give her tenure. Okay, let's backtrack. What did we just say about him? He gave them $25 million, and he asked them to rethink and relook at it. We're talking about an institution that's the suspect anyway, because see, remember, they just hired their first true black coach almost, because he was the one worried about his white wife. So,
have another cup of tea, Hubert.
No, it's tea and crumpets. But you know, us that went through HBCUs recognize certain things about some of our friends who went to those non-HBCUs. There's something that's done to them at them schools that makes you go, because, you know, I mean, everybody's like, well, Dr. Shepherd cussed so much. Yeah, but that redneck filled us with so much stuff about white folks. Because he used to tell us, hey, white folks fucked up everything anywhere they ever been, because if they don't understand it, they need to villainize it or destroy it.
That's true.
That's white folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see, but, you know, back to the subject, it is beyond belief that you all did not know that back in the day, they call it turning. They turned hogs and cows and people the same way. They kept a chart.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Well, you can see it today. I mean, you can see generations of street sweepers.
You know,
generations of street sweepers. Can't see past the janitorial broom and mop. And they have a focus there that is a little different than they just fell. And then you start looking through to say how they word it. Oh, my daddy worked really hard. He worked so hard, you know, and they use terms like ditch diggers. You know, things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
They created a permanent labor force genetically.
Yeah.
And that was
important. Somebody just having to play football or basketball.
Right.
I tell you, something else that's unique about that particular perspective, but not in detail as it is directly from this country, but the DNA follows it.
Yep.
If you follow the ball players, particularly NFL players, who are not from this country, particularly from Africa, what country are they from? Nigeria. Nigeria athletes and people tend to get real buff real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the New York Giants have a history of drafting brothers from Nigeria. You know. They got a history.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I've covered them for a whole bunch of years, brother.
Exactly.
As long as he's not a quarterback, they'll draft him.
There you go. There you go.
No. That's going to be NBA Africa.
Yeah.
Hey. But just to show you how innocent some of this stuff is passed through us informationally. You all know what the term motherfucker comes from?
Yes.
I've had buck breaking.
From buck breaking.
Buck breaking. Yeah.
It's part of buck breaking, but see what they would do is they would mate a son with his mother. That's what it comes from.
Time to go fuck your mama, boy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Literally.
And all they would do is put a bag over his head, a bag over her head, and say go to it.
Mm-hmm. And they were dumbing down the genetic pool. And then when they were feeding them possums and all this other shit, the creator snuck in that watermelon to flush their system, because they truly would have never made it. So they made watermelon seem like it was a joke to eat when it actually saved generations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it just sounded like eating cottage. Oh, look at them chickens eating. So they ended up giving them where they were able to flush their system all the filth they were taking in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the watermelon is a very medicinal food. So the joke was really on the people who thought that it was some kind of joke, when it actually was a holistic effect for them, for those tribes.
And Mike, I want to take that not to the degree and detail that we got as we just going to historically, but what we're talking about this afternoon relative to the NBA, what they're about to do. And I forgot the name of the league, but it's in the process now. $1 million already has been laid down to have a league of 16 to 18 year olds.
A teenage league.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And Patrick, it's twofold, because remember a few weeks ago we were talking about how Michael manipulated the high school system with his own, you know, with the Jordan Classic. Now the NBA can go full bore and start recruiting these kids when they're 12, 10, 9,
And that goes in the same pattern that we're talking about in terms of a developing player. Now, but also we got to deal with the other factor of this. One of the ways that can substantiate this is because over in Europe, young kids of 14, 15 years can go pro, like a Luka did when he was 14, 15 years.
But there's a difference
in a society makeup and posture to live in order to progress, in order to develop, that's in this country. But they're about to do it.
I'll
give some more information about it.
I mean, hey, you two can go to the NBA. You two can win MVP and get swept in the second round, just like your boy.
Well, look what's going on. Amateur high school sports has been pushed severely over the last decade. They even have shows about high school football in states like Georgia and Texas. They've had for years. So now, all football or basketball would do is catch up, because if you're a Canadian kid and you play hockey well, you can be drafted as early as 15 and you're making money.
Yep.
I distinctly remember a kid named Sylvain Lefebvre, who was 6'5 and 15 pounds at 15 years old. Now, by the time he got to the pros, his size hadn't changed and neither had his game, so he faded to black. But the young brothers and sisters have that opportunity to earn that kind of revenue. And with his teenage league, they may open the door and change a whole lot of situations.
That's true.
You know,
I saw something
today that I never thought I would see. Now, you know, we have the NFL Combine, you know, the Underwear Olympics. You have the NBA Combine as well. On Friday, they are going to have a Major League Baseball Combine.
Oh, my God.
Yes. It's basically, you know, now they're not going to get a lot of the top college players because they're going to be in Omaha this weekend because of the, you know, with the College World Series. But the thing, it's surprising that it's taken Major League Baseball this long to jump on that. But see, they've always tried to do stuff on the cheap. You know, they'll either invade the Negro Leagues or they'll go over to, the Caribbean Islands or Latin America or what have you, so they can get their cheap labor. Now they're now they're quote unquote going to try to, you know, in a sense have their own little American Idol, but on a baseball level.
And just to back it up, Tony. Let you know for next February that it's already been okayed and sponsors have already been established to do the college black football players.
Combine.
Have another combine for them already been established. It's going to be bigger next year.
Good. The original one a couple years ago, of course, got blown away by the combine and by COVID. I'm sorry. And they did a little something. They did a little something this year, but it was done on short notice, and they only invited I think about 30 or so players. But the next year, like you said, come February, they're going to basically they'll have a full season in. So now, unfortunately, the kids who came out this year wound up being the unfortunate ones. But at least now, for this upcoming class, they'll get hopefully a decent look-see, and it may work out better because, you know, If the NFL doesn't give them a good look-see, remember, the new USFL will be out by then. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see what winds up happening. But, yeah, it's, you know, look, it's I'm surprised that all these sports haven't really tried to hit, you know, hit that younger thing. I think the NBA has been trying to find ways to circumvent that thing anyway. So now they have a perfect opportunity now.
Right. But let's call this song exactly what it is. Baseball was a bunch of arrogant motherfuckers for thinking that they wouldn't have to resort to something like this.
Yes.
The fact that they're doing a combine. The combine is an act of desperation because everybody else is way ahead of the fucking curve. And baseball,
yes.
Their sport is not designed to catch
up. Yes.
Yeah, they literally have two strikes on them before they even get up to bat. Literally.
I mean,
baseball spent too much time strategically turning it into a vanilla flavored sport by they develop their lower levels, right? Because
there you go.
Your feeder systems is what feed the game. And so I mentioned this a few weeks back, and I've seen a story follow up, and maybe I'll get the video out to the brothers where, you know, since 1957, the Tennessee State Legislature was supposed to give state funding to Tennessee State University and rerouted the money. Now that's up to like $550 million that they owe Tennessee State. Mm-hmm. So if you look at it from, you know, I mean, that's when Coach John B. McLendon went on his run in 57, right? And so you look at, I mean, Oprah, you know, came through there since, you know, we can go on and on and on, right?
Sure.
And so
sure.
If you, and we can go on and on. So if you look at what's taking place underfunded when they were entitled money, what happens is when these people start rising up with no funding, you know, it could be a Motown shit. These motherfuckers, Ashford and Simpson came out of New York and they started writing for Motown and they told the cab driver, take us to Motown Studios. They showed up to that little house in the hood. Motown Studios, not this. The cab driver says, the only Motown I know. You know? Something to come out of basically a two-story house that pushed that engine to this day. What happens if you fund it? What happens if you get some money behind it and on some unbelievable level? So when you start seeing these people rising up with no funding that they're entitled to have, and you cut it off, you reroute it. Think about all the brothers and sisters who may have had access to those universities and what the school would have looked like and what kind of academic enrichment they could have had on campus with that money. How many percentage of the population didn't get what's rightfully theirs by that one decision of not funding them?
And speaking of Tennessee State, there was an article I read concerning how connected with the aspect of critical racial theory led to Tennessee making the decision to if they had expanded the money to, I think it was a quarter, to expand the money for the University of Tennessee.
They gave UT all the money every year, correct. Yeah. Every year they got the funding.
That's what, but the trick is if you're going to get more money, you got to put white kids in the school. And that was a trick to keep Tennessee white because we didn't want to do that. And that's what led to Tennessee State going to another conference. It was a very interesting story. That's right down that line.
And you're correct. And so you got $500 million. So I know we come in here on the money, follow the money, all the money. I mean, well, here's $500 million deprived that was rightfully owned through the state legislative system. Maryland was the other state, so I guess Maryland,
Eastern Shore,
State, right? The brothers, you know, the HBCUs in Maryland, they got short-circuited too. And so Maryland did it and Tennessee did it in abundance. Fisk is private, so the state university systems are the ones entitled that money. And now the HBCU presidents are running it down and chasing it because they realize they got literally, I mean, you can't spell the word F as big as it is or what happened to these universities.
Yes.
Think about the impact that is to people. Think about that borderline student that could have got some college funding or scholarship that was rightfully theirs or some funding that could have changed or a curriculum that could have been put on campus. It could have been game changers. And they know these things because they know it's about the funding process. They shortchanged a strong amount of populace that could have been having an incredible impact, because the ones who were there doing their thing was making dents, and that was the fear factor. But now they, hey, you got to render the season. You got to pay up now. You got to pay it up.
Cut the check, literally.
Cut that, as MLK said, you know, hey, man, we're going to, one of my favorite
we're going to Washington, we're going to go to D.C.,
and we're going to get our
check. Yes, they don't.
You
they don't play that one. They don't play. They don't play that. They don't play that tape. They don't play that tape.
Come on, bro.
They don't play that tape on Martin Luther King Day, do they?
No, never. I love that rap. You know what I'm saying? I love that rap. He said, "We gonna go get our dough, bro." You know, he said, every organization that's come here got fronted, you know, some money and a head start. You know, to get going. So it is about the funding in this system. It is about to get the income. It is about to get the support. If a brother and a sister got a job, I mean, we grew up some talented people in our communities. If there's a brother over there can got a good deal with shoes. I mean, this brother here, man, he knows how to design shoes. Who backs his ass? Who supports him? You know, who says, yo, we need to get behind this brother because he, yo, he can be the next such and such and such and such. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. You know, we don't get behind it. You know, who amongst the crew has that, the each one teach one? And if you're not operating from that principle, which is a simple principle that comes from the motherland, a culture where you are supposed to hold up what holds you up.
Right.
Now, if you don't hold up what holds you up, that could be the universe, that could be your health, that could be your job, it could be your old lady, whatever it may be. If you don't hold up what holds you up, you're going to always have a flaw in your game.
Yeah, true that.
You'll never get outside it no matter what.
There's something about what Eric is saying that makes me angry and smiling at the same time, because this atmosphere, whether it generates a new league for teenagers, whether it generates more revenue for sports, they can't get out of Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street was the culmination of white anger and white resentment, and it destroyed for the simple act of destroying. There's that saying about someone just had to ruin the world because they just wanted to see shit burn. That's what happened in Tulsa. And that's what's going to happen now, because in our media, we see it. In the application, of the games from a societal standpoint, they don't want to see this. They don't want to see players speaking up for themselves. They don't want to see players really giving back to the community. You know, I heard more shit about LeBron's school than a little bit. And it was only because he was so exceptional at what he did, because when David Robinson did those things in Texas, nobody said boo. But because LeBron had been as high profile as he had been, and all these positive results were emanating from this, well, you know, black men doing this, are you kidding me? And they couldn't. They had to shut up. They couldn't say a fucking thing. They've been mealy mouthed since they knew about Delonte West fucking around with LeBron's mom. They knew they couldn't touch it because the money was more important. Now it's switching the other way around, and they have to get that resentment out somehow. That's what we're seeing in my home.
Yeah. Well, if you look at a brother like, I mean, LeBron's going to be on his apex list, but, you know, for the sake of his environment and how we have things set up, you know, we can get on the other side of the chessboard and start making some moves too, you know, in all fairness. And the thing is, in all, we can make some moves, man, you know, I mean, keep it in 100, right? But we'll keep the forum what it is, because we're not going to, you know, tell people to get off the weed here. Robert, you know, we ain't going to do that bullshit. So, you know, Robert Covington, you know, trailblazer, Tennessee State, I mean, he came out of pocket to a TSU basketball team in their own practice facility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear about that.
Yeah.
A little bit of token. Now, that's saying something in terms of kicking back to your old thing, because you're not part of a consortium where you're lending your name
to a school, but you're really not the financier, a.k.a. what took place in the state of Ohio. I'll just leave it that open. I won't go no details
and,
in that.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep that 100, though. Let's keep that 100. So, in other words, Obama Middle School, Obama Middle School, or, you know, when he became president, I'm certain there's a number of schools that were named after him. This guy, he didn't put up, he didn't have to put up a cent to do so. Hint. So, with that being said,
yeah.
All right. So, with that being said,
yep.
There's this thing like magic, you know, Irvin Johnson, you know, like I said, Irvin's about the black thing, right? And, you know, things happen when you get the money and get the la-la land, right? Tough to shake la-la land. A lot of the best brothers have gone to la-la land with me, Michael Jackson. I mean, can I keep going? Sam Cooke, right?
Yep.
All their situations took place in la-la land. All right? And there's others. You know,
that's
and so
true.
There's a whole nother energetic going down there. And so he went there, and Will said, man, I was concerned he could get, would the brother be able to get through knowing what I know about down here?
Mm-hmm.
So, but he did his thing. He did what he could. So the narrative was Magic owns the Dodgers 1%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
1%. That's not ownership. That's
nope, no, it's not. That's exactly.
So in other words, Reggie, if you buy a 12-team
piece, and it's barely,
barely
a piece, Eric.
Hey, Reggie, if you buy a 12-piece and all you offer me is a quarter of a roll, do I own a part of your box? Your chicken box?
No. That's like wings on layaway.
Come on.
Jay-Z. Jay-Z 1%. Owns the Nets. Him and Prokhorov.
Mm-hmm.
He had 99 problems and 1%
of
ownership
worth
one.
I'll never forget the joke that they said about Mr. Beyonce once. Where they were saying Jay-Z has fuck you money, but Beyonce has no fuck you money.
That's it.
Yep. Well, you know, I mean, so the narrative is and what the spin is, you know, I mean, then we can really keep chopping this shit up, right? Because the whole Ali Cassius Clay story was built off the Liston fights.
Yes.
And there was some shady with Sonny.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, and so we start peeling back layers, man. You know, and we can take that deeper dive. I mean, how far down the rabbit hole you really want to take it?
Mm-hmm.
When you see a cat like Jackie Robinson and a cat like Bill Russell, and, I mean, listen, you know, I've studied these brothers thoroughly. I can tell you they would never get the publicity. What they did with their career and after career and what they want to do in their black communities from the civil rights, right, to fighting
in
the Panthers. I mean, these brothers, I mean, to Africa. I mean, Jackie's son's over there in Africa right now. He's
right
on coffee farm.
Kill them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so,
He left the states and never came back.
Jackie went so all in after his career. Mm-hmm. In so many layers of the system, though, right? He was working through the system. He was vested as all. There's no athlete around ever been as vested as what Bill Russell and Jackie did with their careers as mega champions, winning all these titles, and then what they were doing on their off time. They were like beyond all in.
And Aaron, you know something about Jackie Robinson? It led to him dying too.
Yes, I mean Jackie. I mean, his wife Rachel talks about it, like, you know, I mean, one of those stories, man. I mean, the brother, you know, he went blind, and she said that on his last day, you know, he ran to her. You know, he didn't have any clothes on. I guess he knew it was that time. Ran to her, hugged her, told her he loved her, and he died.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but he got that in, though, right? You know, he got that in. That's who he was. But the sacrifice his brother put in. For all the right fucking reasons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
And during that time,
these modern day guys got to research these dudes. They were the legit ones, not the ones who are proxies.
Yeah. No, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead, Patrick, please.
I often think about, and if there should be a posthumous baseball Hall of Famer, it should be Curt Flood, because what Curt Flood did for this league in baseball, every player that has a check needs to donate 1% to a Curt Flood fund for whatever, because what he's done for that paycheck.
Exactly, and see what gets lost.
And Spencer did the same thing for the NBA.
Yes. And see what gets lost with Flood. What gets lost with Flood is, you know, they're always quick to bring up what Jackie did on the field, and he was great, no doubt about that. But people have forgotten. People have forgotten how great a player Curt Flood. You got to remember.
Thank you.
As great as Willie Mays was back in the day, as great as Clemente was back in the day, as great as Billy Williams was, when you talk about the best, when you talk about for a 5-year stretch who was the best outfielder in Major League Baseball, Curtis Flood.
Especially defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And it's ironic.
He was married to Judy Pace, so that was a good decision.
Oh, man. Yeah, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame just for that. He just deserves to be in the Hall of Fame just for that. But the thing,
that's why they're going to keep him out.
Exactly. Well, see, they always bring up the misplayed triple in the 68 World Series.
As long as Tim McCarver's still talking.
Oh, good Lord.
But you know what? I mean, but back to the proxy things, man. You know, these guys want to, you know, use these talks and use the raised fist. The sacrifice these brothers put in, man. I mean, they were really walking it like they talk. And it's nice to get the recognition. It's nice to be able to do that. But they have studied our style enough to, like, yeah, we can't let this duplicate. So we'll do a presentation, but we're going to present it with proxies.
Exactly.
I'm gonna tell you, and one person we have to, because we talked about the NBA, that we got to talk. Of course, we talked about Bill Russell. We cannot forget the Big O.
Oh yeah, I mean Oscar, and we'll see with Oscar. That starts with his high school days.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In Indianapolis, when they won the state championship and beat Dick Barnett's squad. They were the first black school that was able to do that, and that school was amazing in their history and legacy.
And he studied and be amazed. He integrated Cincinnati too, did he not? University of Cincinnati.
Yes.
Or were there guys before him?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No,
yes.
He did. Okay.
I think Wayne Embry might have been before him if he went to Cincinnati. I can't remember. I don't know if Wayne Embry
was
there.
I thought he was a Xavier guy. I thought he was Xavier. Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
All right. Ohio something. Wayne Embry, right, first black GM.
Yep, we were talking about him earlier.
When they won that championship. And Wayne Embry, I mean, who ever mentions Wayne Embry?
I know.
Yeah. True. Very, very true.
Mean, the history
and a good ball player in his own right as well.
Yeah, I mean, and he was part of Toronto's rise when Toronto won it all. He was still in the front office when Toronto won the championship.
Mm-hmm.
So he took it to Canada. Wayne Embry was a tremendous front office person for the Milwaukee Bucks for years.
Absolutely.
And he was the first brother to win a championship as a GM. When he brought in Al Cid, as they called him in high school, Al Cindor, when they called him there, they used the Moorish term as if he was burning shit down, Alicinda. And then, you know, Lewis Ferdinand, who had a 90% GPA through college. And I ran across a high school interview of him when he was 16 years old. And what did he want to be at 16 years old? A biochemist. Let me come back. And he's still doing intellectual pursuits. You know, and so the thing is, these brothers don't study the DNA and the historicals. They don't give the proper respects. They're surfing the wave of all this energy, and they're fronting as proxies, and we can see it, those who know. Now, we're not going to call it out, but we know they ain't really standing on that stronger foundation.
And what's so sad is the information's out there.
Yes,
it is. The information's
out there.
And that's
why we're sharing it. We'll get them going just by our conversations.
Exactly. And see, that's the – it's just damn laziness. You know, we didn't, you know, when we were growing up, we did not. And again, I'm trying not to sound like the old guy at the barbershop, but damn it, that kid took my turn. I was next. But that's another story. But the thing is, with all this information that's out there, and you're still see, you know, we live in this information society, but most of the information is bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Tony, I guess that was at my granddaughter's graduation. I was talking to one.
Congratulations.
She's a sweetheart. From dyslexia to summa cum laude. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
The point is, I was talking to my lady was a former administrator, Dr. Jones, and at school here locally, talking with her colleagues. He made a very good statement about some things that are going on in terms of education, which leads to what we're talking about. He said a lot of people get schooled, but they ain't educated.
A lot of guys get schooled about the league,
but they ain't educated about what's really going on.
Well, one of the things that you say, you know, really well, that my goodness, it articulates the point. I mean, we were talking about enunciation. We were talking about proper presentation. We were talking about O.J. calling out Carl Douglas, his lawyer, for the spittle, and he had to work on his voice inflection, this, that, and the other, because he was in the theater. But what we're not talking about here is, like, you know, what, again, quoting MLK, since everyone can research it, you tell the world who you are with the words that come out of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see these interviews, regardless of how much they associate this person and applaud this person for what they're doing, this, that, and the other, then we see how they articulate, or even with their little Twitter notes, right, and the grammar is from here to whatever, you do not come off as intelligent.
Absolutely.
You can't hide it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say what you want to say, but we all know that you're a front man for someone else. We all know Al Haymon out of Harvard University runs Floyd Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
He runs that pay-per-view thing, man, that money hustle. He's the one that dials those networks in. Floyd will tell you that. Hey, Al Haymon's my guy. Al Haymon's out of Harvard. He shifted the whole boxing game. He torched the boxing game because we can't get the right fights because you're controlling the pay-per-view. We can't get the right for names. See what I'm saying? It goes on and on and on. But that's who ran the show, this, that, and the other, in terms of how you get the financing done. And that's where Don King, for all his numbers running game, was beyond brilliant. Yeah, he's done some once over, but Don King is a brilliant brother.
It is.
Yeah. In comparison, right? So, you know, we all know the historicals and how they play it to people. He's still a brilliant brother. He's running his hustle at a higher level, Mr. Policy Man. But the thing being is, we watch these brothers speaking. You know, John Thompson, you used to take your hat when some of his
Lord
Georgetown
numbers.
Players, when they get that mic in front of them, they're like, they're at Georgetown?
Yeah.
When they got to talking. So you got to get a speech class, bro. You got to get people
that's
in
it.
Front of them. You got to get that
that's
polish,
it.
Man.
That's it.
It matters.
That's it.
Yes, it does.
That's it. I was around Thompson. Well, I was around the era, and not only of him, but his son. Yes, that guy. That you know, you're not getting the camera yet unless you can handle it. And you know, he didn't get it.
Listen, you have to be because you tell the world who you are. If you're using
Thank
a
you.
Whole bunch of colloquialisms and you can't get through a sentence, and you're making this money, and they say, "Oh my God, he's such a brilliant businessman. Look at what he's done." Then we hear him rap. We like, "Ooh, really?"
See?
Eric is 1,000% right. While I was in Germany, there's a German idiom that says, "Show me your friends, and I tell you who you are."
Okay, there you go.
It reflects everything that you
Very
all
true.
Just mentioned there. And I was always cautious whenever I opened my mouth to speak German that I was correct, because it wasn't just that when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Right.
They knew that others were paying attention to what I had to say. Not that I gave
Correct.
A fuck, but
Correct.
I wanted to do it because I wanted to get it right. And that's really the basis for all this, how we do what we do. That goes from all of our mamas saying, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And a lot
now,
of
check
us.
This out. Yeah, so peep this. So if you're, let's do the overseas thing. So someone's I won't even name a country. They're going to learn English, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to learn English if they're going to come to the United States. They're going to go work in the tech industry. So they need to learn English. Know what they're learning? They're learning money.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They're learning money. So we take language. No, they're learning money.
Yep.
They want to learn the right sentences and verbiage, not just to get by. Because the ones who just want to get by, they just hang in their own communities, get their own videos, shop at their own stores and shit. They don't need the interface.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones who are coming here, and I mean, I've seen cats in this country, man, 8 years coming from India, get into the tech industry, and they and the guy's been calling me. He's got 2.7 mil. He's trying to figure out how to manage.
Go.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, 8 years here? How'd you get that? What took place here?
Yes.
And these people are all up to be, well, you know, I have all these thoughts, and I was trying to figure out how I want to move my money. And you're like, 8 years?
Yeah.
You know, and how'd you develop that? Listen, they came in there, they bring their science with them, and they convert that, and they use the language for the do-re-mi. They'll turn you over to rap. Okay, here you go. What's the latest lingo and stuff in that crap, right? Crap is manifestus, right? Put a little 70s beat to it for the hook, right? You know, baseline that, but use horrid language. Horrid language. So you hear these people accept a reward, and they can't get through a one sentence without three double negatives.
Like you, man.
Are we listening? Are we paying attention? And can we really associate that with intelligence? No, we cannot, because you have to communicate that.
That's a perfect way to wrap us up for final thoughts. Before we get to that, I want everybody to know, thanks to C-SPAN, that we all free. So C-SPAN announced to the world that June 19th will be officially Juneteenth. They made it formal.
Oh, my goodness.
And in the spirit of that, I turn loose the rapper One Joseph Tex.
Girl, listen, I want to pull your coats to something. Listen to this. Men are getting scared, yeah. They're getting scared, so he and she. Men are getting scared, girl. They're getting scared, so he and she. There used to be a time when a woman could get a man with just her charms. Now you know the ball. Get a man, she gotta take him, she gotta take him, she gotta take him, she gotta take him out of the woman down. Men are getting scared, yeah. Oh, they're getting scared, yeah. They're getting scared for hands, too. And that's mighty scared. Listen to this. I was talking to this woman the other day. Now she said she was gonna quit her man, oh, she's got a raggedy cock. To that. Look here, women are funny though. Every time a car's running good, they say, child, that's my car. Soon as it gets to running bad, she say, I don't want that old car, that's his car. Listen, she was telling me, she said the other day, she said, it runs hot, it burns off, this old car is beat to run down. The other day, the battery fell dead, right in the heart of town, embarrassing me. At that table and eat all the barbecue, it ain't gonna give me none. Say what? Oh, not you again. Say Leroy, here's this woman with them skinny legs again. She gotta grease them out this time. Come on, baby, get this grease them out woman. She reminds me of them folks up in Navasota, Texas, eating barbecue and drinking red soda water on the 19th of June. Look at it. Give me
a... There is your proof. Eating barbecue and drinking red soda water on the 19th of June. The only reference any artist ever made to Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth, everybody. Everybody, yes, quickly, indeed. Let's go down the line. Everybody, give me a little bit of wisdom. Reggie, you start.
Well, what I see right now with the white supremacists going around talking about grenades and the general talking about, hey, the biggest threat we got is angry white men. I call them Europeans.
That's true.
What the hell with the history? All I'm saying again, that shout out to my homeboy, Michael Paul Williams, who's a graduate of Virginia University, was a Pulitzer Prize winner,
yes, indeed,
this past week.
Right on.
We're so proud. We're so proud of that brother. And the wild thing about it, that the Negroes here in Richmond, Virginia, didn't even want to support the brother in them lean years. And the state of Virginia didn't even announce him for award on the state level, but also he got the Pulitzer Prize. His article's on the front page of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Unfucking real.
Where's
but there is a God.
When you need him.
There is a God.
Right on, brother. Patrick, come on.
Very quickly, two things. The fact that the government decided to recognize Juneteenth, black folks been doing this in Texas when I was down there, it ain't no big thing. I said, let's do it ourselves. We don't need the government to do anything for us, but that's another story. Next week, I will give you, I talked to Mike, I left in the studio. They're about to make the announcement about the 12-team NCAA football playoffs and the circumstances that surround it. Brother, it ain't no coincidence. July 1st, they're going to make an announcement, one announcement about it, but already it will produce billions of dollars.
I mean, in the title of that movie, was it More Money or Mo Money?
Mo Money.
More stupidity than, okay, you can't be intelligent if you want more money.
There you go.
Right, just saying.
We'll talk about it next week.
Yes, sir. Professor, come on with it.
Well, I hope you all are sitting down. Congratulations to the men and women's.
He's going to say it.
From the farm school / North Carolina.
I'm watching them.
Oh, my God. A Ram giving A&M Aggie credit? Oh, my God.
That's it. That's it. We all going to get struck by lightning tomorrow.
I'm dead.
He has two NAIA national championships in track and field, 1959, 1960. They finished second in 1961. Big House was actually coaching that group, so that's why they lost. But anyway, and they're talking about somebody going to the Olympics, so just so you know, Leon Coleman.
Shots fired.
Went to Delta State University, was the hurdler at the 1968
Olympics. He went way
in Mexico State.
Mm-hmm.
Just so the Aggies know, keep it in my perspective, but we're still proud of him because and just so you all know, the young man and the young lady who won the championships and so forth, who was the leaders, both of them are native North Carolinians, along with the head coach, who's a native North Carolina, although he did make a mistake and go down to Clemson. That we'll let him go. But, you know,
should have took a left turn at Albuquerque.
Along with teammates made North Carolina
bunny travel underneath the ground routine.
Sometime late next year, we will be actually chronicling their efforts in sports encyclopedia because we will be starting on new basketball shortly, and we're getting ready to wrap up in women's basketball. But you know, that shows what can happen even at an HBCU, and not just at UNT, but I think there was somebody.
You're talking about A&T, right?
Okay, North
cool.
Carolina Agricultural
I can't tell you happy
okay, cool. They clowned it, man. They turned it out.
I can't tell the pastor getting them love if he's clowning them. I can't tell.
That's right. We like respect. That's a good thing.
Eric,
show
something.
Fred,
I'll just let you know, one of the best runners in New Jersey, Alicia Bethea, just put AT on her list Monday. She's been recruited by USC, by University of Oregon, Rutgers
yes,
here locally, and she put North Carolina AT on her list. She made that known.
Come on down. The water's fine in Carolina. Come on down.
She learned how to farm and hold on to,
Shot fired, Lord. Ram just can't
yes,
get no love
yes,
today.
Sir.
He played
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome to A&T doing that because, you know, hey, man, I can't resist. You know, my younger brother was part of the 1984. No, he was after 84. He was part of the 1986, I think it was 87, SMU Outdoor National Championship team. So he got a national championship on the track team for SMU, you know. So, you know, my father got national championship for brothers. I mean, I could go on, but, you know, just to give that little quick shout-out. Awesome to hear that about A&T. NBA is going on. The playoffs are happening. What many people do not know is that 11 referees in the NBA graduated from HBCUs. So well represented.
Here.
In their leadership there that, you know, the brothers went there and now they're decision makers on the sideline to the floor. So all these contributions just run us over. We can't go without a contribution, so it's kind of good to recognize these great things. But awesome to see what A&T's done because speed kills, man. And we've always had that in our generations. And since Patrick, you know, he's a Jersey guy too, so he can recall that there was a lot of Olympians that came out of there. You know, Joetta Clark was a friend. You know,
yes,
and then there was Carl Lewis early on. Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, Patterson. Dennis Mitchell, you know, Edgewood, New Jersey, they turned it out. And then you may be familiar with John Moon, who went to Trinity State and was the long-term track coach at Seton Hall. So, you know, for a long time, we just have so many layers and tentacles and so many places we take it for granted. So just want to get all those variables in about just the wondrous work of those who attended HBCUs.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Eric.
Gary, if you're there, come on in. You might be riding on Tony. Are you there?
Nope. Okay, he didn't get a chance to come back. T-Mac, throw something in the pot.
Very quickly, rest in peace, Jim Mudcat Grant, the original Black Ace.
That's
All right, Mudcat.
No, yeah, over the weekend. Over the weekend, unfortunately.
Man. Yeah, Cleveland
Indians, Minnesota Twins, Oakland A's briefly, Pittsburgh Pirates, and matter of fact, he put together a group called the Black Aces, basically all the
black
American pitchers who won 20 games in the major league. So we're talking as far back as Don Newcomb and Sad Sam Jones to guys like Dontrell Willis and CC Sabathia and others, Fergie Jenkins, Vida Blue, Dwight Gooden, all were part of that. But he was the first American League black pitcher to win 20 games. Of course, part of that 1965 American League champion Minnesota Twins that ran it to some guy named Koufax stopped them from winning the World Series. I forget his name.
Sandy. Sandy ripping shit in half. Where's Tony Oliva when you need him?
Yeah, really. No shit.
It's all over stage.
That brother belongs in the Hall of Fame. He could hit.
Yes, he does.
I love
he
that
really
brother.
He really does. He really does. Where the
hell is Larry Heisel when you need him?
Stop it. Well, gentlemen, I have appreciated everybody coming in, throwing some good shit in the pot. You know, we carry on over 1,400 shows. I'm thankful to everybody. And, of course,
yes, sir.
I want everybody to go stay safe and be safe. Once you get from A to B and back to A-OK, we'll let the judge close the court.
Yeah, this court is now in session. His Honor, Judge Pigmeat Martin Poseidon. Yeah, yeah, he's a coat of swings. It's just about ready to do that thing. I don't want no tears, I don't want no lies. Above all, I don't want no alibis. This judge is hip, and that ain't all. He'll give you time if you're big or small. Fall in line, or this coat is neat. Peace, brother.
Love, here come the judge. Here come the judge. Everybody know that he is the judge.
Your next door neighbor. Out of this courtroom. Out of this courtroom.
Judge, your honorship high, sir. Did I hear you say order in the court?
Yes, I said order.
Well, I'll take 2 cans of beer, please.
Remember me?
No, who are you, boy?
Well, I'm the fella that introduced you to your wife.
To my wife?
Yeah.
Life, you son of a gun, you. Come November election time, you vote your way and I vote mine. Case is a tie and the money gets spent. Vote for Take Me Not for President. I am the judge. I am the judge. Everybody knows. Everybody know I am the judge.